Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee and colleagues. My name is Maxwell Kakhanya, Director General, Water Affairs. We are here to present the National Water Resources Strategy. I'll speak later about how we intend dealing with the shortened version of our presentation, but for the time being, just to introduce the members of the our team who are here, which is substantial in the reflection of the importance of the NWRS itself. If we can just take this line and then Fred in front and the rest and the roles we play in this, please.
Morning, Chief Person and honorable members. I have another acting DDG for policy and regulation. I'm still with you for a couple of months, the SI chairperson. Good morning, chairperson and honourable members. I'm also still with you, Trevor Bowser, chief operations officer. Thank you. Good morning, Chair and honourable members. Bangiseni Nefumbada is my name, acting DDG, Water Resources Information Management. Sorry, Water Resources Management in Policy and Regulation.
Honourable members, it's Tandik Ambassa, DDG Regions. Morning, honourable members. My name is Pichunia Ramlinyo, Director of Operational Support, responsible for skills development under the strategy.
Morning, honourable members. Marva Scott for Communications and Water Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Johan van der Rooyen. I'm Director of National Water Resource Planning, doing planning on a strategic level.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Ndile Kamahati. I'm the Chief Director of Water Ecosystems, responsible for water resources protection.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Nokolo Nopai. I'm in the office of the ADG, Policy and Regulation.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. Nice to be back again. Togo Sigwaza, responsible for institutions.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Eustacia Bofilatos, also from the Department in Institutional Oversight with Water Management Institutions. Yes.
Honourable Chair, members, I'm Fred von Sale. I'm from Acting Director of Services, but also supporting the national strategy.
Morning, honourable members and chair. I'm Errol Mokova, parliamentary officer. Maybe I didn't even need to introduce myself, I don't know.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, we are here in the invitation of the committee to present the National Water Resources Strategy. It's gone through the cluster groupings, DGs, it's gone through cabinet, and it's gazetted. It's the period now of public consultation, which 90 days would start. And it is proper and fitting that we start with this committee and as the chair said, there will still be public hearings. We had planned and prepared ourselves to be here on the 4th and the 5th because the National Water Resources Strategy as a legal framework for the mandate we have of looking after the National Water Resources as per the National Water Act Chapter 2, it requires these periodic reviews in 5-year intervals. That is what is happening or belatedly about 2 years. And so it contains aspects to do with the core functions of within water. There's also investment framework. Chair, just a clarification. When we have today, initially it was 1.5 days. Is it a half a day or is it a full day today? Okay. All right. So that somehow...
I want you guys to just touch on all the main things.
Okay.
And if there's something really important that you're going to do,
yes,
then we'll make plans somewhere else.
All right.
Well, I know how much work you put into this.
Yes.
I want you to be able to explain to them. As I said, it may even be better for us that you come and actually give more detail after we've been in the public hearing. Because then we've also heard what the public says.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Just for the benefit of the other committee members, they say we would have covered the National Water Resources Strategy perspective that is setting the scene there and look into water facts, strategic issues, core over a view, consultation process and framework. We also would be covering the communication strategy, and which we still intend doing that, and then the specific issues highlighting the core issues, and then the water security, and which like water demand and conservation management, the investment framework, ecosystems protections, institutional realignment sector, equity, policy and social development, water, improve regulation, skills and capacity, information and research. Taking a cue from what the chair is saying, we'll just touch today the overview, which will be done by the Fred Vancey, and and see how the time allows us to reach the other areas, communication, planning and water security, and then regulation, the ecosystems. But we'll be guided by time and review what we've been able to prepare. It's substantive, and then the chair has recognized that. So without wasting much of the limited time, let me hand over to Fred Francis to kickstart that.
Just give us this brief. I just want to know what you're doing, so at least we know, what's happening parallel to this process.
Thanks for that. Mava can share with you more in detail communications, but there's a communication through the media. We've got the web page, very good. We can show you example how the web page also look like, that people can engage and actually give comments on the web page. Then we plan regional workshops through our regional offices. Some regions indicate we'll have up to 9 or 10 regional workshops, in also engaging with current fora that are existing in the regions. And then also we will have specific sector engagements, important sectors like agriculture, like the energy sector, like mining, etc. So this is a lot of, but we can share with you the detailed plan. Mawa is in his part of the presentation, with Fred put up a whole conversation.
What is your time frame for that?
Within the 90 days, within the 3 months that we've got.
3 months from...
The Gazette was, it was in the Gazette last Friday, the 7th
September.
Of September, yes.
So, October, November, December.
Yeah.
So within 7, you want to do all that by 7 December.
Yeah, we...
And then after that, you're going to relook the document. And what's your target for that to take it to Cabinet?
See, it depends on how much we have to amend the document and what.
And if you don't have dates yet, that's fine.
Yeah, say around January, February.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, one just wants to know what the process. I don't want to know the details of the process. Okay. I just think, you know, I didn't hear local government there. I hope there's a huge sectoral engagement with local government, okay? All right. Okay, let's start. Is it Fred first? Mr. Fonseca.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, thank you. Personally, I was looking forward to this because I thought I really enjoyed some of these debates and the input. So in preparing this presentation, I identified three or four issues. One is to obtain shared understanding of the purpose of the strategy. If you don't understand the framework, then we can't talk together. But I think it's important that we have the platform. Then I'll present an overview, just a broad overview of all the aspects, and we will highlight a few key issues. In the presentation handed out, we also organized subsets, but unfortunately we will not deal with that today. So there are detailed issues, but I think it's important not only to obtain input, but you will see for the strategy we will not like a partnership and support. This is a much bigger issue to make things happen. So in the presentation itself, I was setting the scene. We will present the consultation process as requested.
Could you start off by telling us, remember, I'm not in this, don't come from this sector, so this thing of a strategy is quite interesting to me because it's not something one sees elsewhere. What's the difference between a white paper, this strategy, etc.? I mean, in terms of, if you pass this strategy, what effect has it got? What binding legality? I mean, can someone come and hold you bound to something that you've got in the strategy? Well, what do you see its legal status to be, this strategy? What does the law in that say? Can you just, when you start off, just say that a little bit to me there and just place myself where this thing fits in?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with that. Let's start with the motive and drive for the strategy, the purpose. The first one, it is a legal requirement. Let's make it very clear. It's in Section 2 of the Act. It's very clear there must be a strategy. But I hope that you will understand that if we just do it because we have to do it, it's not sufficient. We've identified other purposes and drivers. The one is it's a logical business principle. I mean, if we run a big business like water, you need to have a strategy, pull all things together. But I think the serious water challenges, I put up serious water challenges we have, demands an intervention, and it demands an intervention strategy to make things happen. But we also want to say it's a very complex environment. And the complex environment, so far it's a very, like loose cannons working there, and we feel that we need a comprehensive integrated strategy with the sectors. So the complex environment requires leadership and coordination, that requires putting together a strategy. But the other issue that came out of the last year especially is that we were not totally aligned with the macro strategies, the National Development Plan, and we've got the new growth path, and we need to align with those. I mean, it cannot be like this. So we need a tool to engage, not only engage, but to negotiate, integrate, and align. And it's also critical to understand we're not just responding. Everyone is saying we're going to increase agriculture by 50%, but we have to respond to that. So somewhere we need the engagement platform. And then, very importantly, Chair, I think you raised it, and I know that our opposition leaders also raised this issue. We cannot go on with our existing management model. We need a new era of smarter water management. We use it on infrastructure, but we need to work on better governance, a better leadership, a better coordination, better licensing, etc. And it introduces a whole new thinking, a new paradigm. So I just want to emphasize the motive. So coming back to the legal requirement as requested there up front, the National Water Act stipulates, and I want to quote the Act there, the minister must establish a national resource strategy. It's a must. And then it says a critical section in there that the Act says, the water resources of the Republic must be protected, used, developed, conserved, managed, and controlled in accordance with the national resource strategy. So what it actually says is that the strategy becomes a legal tool. It's the tool that we have to deal with this. Now, I want to just go and explain something that we added over the last few months again. When you looked at the strategy, the first strategy was focusing on 9 technical issues like infrastructure, building this, doing that. But I'll come back to the strategic analysis. In Chapter 1 of the Act, And I quoted that series. It says the water resources must be directed, used, developed, conserved, and managed and controlled. Those are all the functional areas. But the critical issue says to support. And there are 11 core outcomes. It says basic human needs, equitable access, redressing the past, efficient, sustainable use, social development, economic development, protecting aquatic systems, preventing pollution, degradation, and also disaster management, dam safety, international areas. It says that's the purpose. And the access, you should have a strategy for each of these areas. So in terms of the Act, Chair, the legal side, it says there must be a strategy. And the access, there must be a strategy to support actually the prosperity and economic issue of the country. So I think this is really a legal requirement that you should have it, and it's logic. So coming back, these are the focus areas. And I said, let's go back to basic. Let's focus on those issues and do our job that we should be doing. The positioning the water and put it together again. In terms of the another driver is that we have these water concerns. We all know that we've got social equity obligations. And there are also concerns that we're not meeting them. The second one is, do we have enough water? Do we have security for growth and development? There is a concern. The water resource pollution is well known, the concern about the acid mine drainage, the wastewater from the municipalities, etc. But in the report we have highlighted, there was a FIPA map and report that's produced that we've got serious environmental degradation in the country. More than 60% of our ecosystems are in a bad state. So we have to deal with this business. And then disaster management and the impact of climate change, we have to deal with this. I mean, these are threats that we cannot sit still, and those are obligations. And then in this whole system, we thought about water security, and it's not just about making water available. It's that the whole value chain from source to tap, and back again, that the critical area of security is the functionality of our infrastructure. It's one thing to have resource, but is it coming out of the taps for energy for the people? So water security is more than just about the resource. And then from this we said, hey, no, we need better governance regulation. We need, and that dictates better knowledge and skills and capacity. We need to think about financing, and the big issue is implementation. So I'll just raise those concerns that's all over the news and all over the places, and even from your side coming back. So coming back to that, the picture I've drawn in terms of the purpose as part of Section 1 of the National Water Act, I just put up some happy or sad faces if we score ourselves. Unfortunately, I have some preliminary partnerships with our colleagues and also from the sector. And for basic human needs, I think we've done well. I mean, we're at 95% at the moment. But we know from functionality side and water security side, there is a big concern. We're only at 74%, and from water security, about 60%. The equitable access, people feel it's not good enough. Redressing the past is not good enough. The sustainability is a major concern. We put up as a red concern. And then the socioeconomic development is a risk. If we don't secure water in time, there's a risk out there. The aquatic system is not efficient. The pollution is not acceptable. And then the disaster management is there. We're doing great, but I think we will be better. So what we just look at that, we need to address it and turn it around. So we're there, but we're okay. Then the big picture that you ask about the implications of this act. The Act Section 7 says the Minister, the Director General, an organ of state, any water management institution, must give effect to the National Water Resource Strategy when exercising any power or performing any duty in terms of the Act. So this is a critical point.
The framework in which it operates, I mean the National Water Strategy, reading that sentence,
that's the implication.
Is the policy framework that you have to operate in.
Correct.
When you're performing an act or something, you go to the Water Strategy and you see what it says.
That's the implication.
You owe when it doesn't say anything, then you're in trouble.
So that was the challenge that we'd like to highlight, because in this whole process, the previous one gave you the process and procedures and referred to all the legal aspects in the Act. So the National Strategy one still stands. And we didn't want to duplicate it time and again, because so in designing the system, it's critical that you ask that question, because I think how far, how thick is the document? Is it the total technical total strategy, total policy strategy, total issues. So we have to design a smart system, because we compare to all the other strategies, as you stated, the national environment strategy is about 30, 50 pages. The energy security, is about 30 pages. Now we come back and the comparison one you'll see is about more than 300 pages. So we have to really think about what detail we go in. So we designed some subsets about operational strategies as well. But I think the policy issues is the one debate we have. How far do you go that you can actually enforce this issue? And that format is not totally yet there, but I think over the next 3 months we can discuss it to strengthen this business. But it's got a legal implication. All right.
Okay.
So then I've put up the slide because at the previous meetings I enjoyed this with you guys. Let's do a strategic assessment up front before we design it. Just go put the document. And the previous strategy focused on some technical issues. Now it's 9 technical issues, and we could go about this. But what we did is we look at this and say, why are these things not happening? Why is it we have a pollution? Why is it that we don't implement a strategy? What's behind it? And one thing that came out that water is not central to development. I mean, this is, if it was, then we would have a better status out there. And I think what is important that we appreciate that the inadequate status in water, inadequate commitment, inadequate interface with the sectors, and inadequate focus. So, sitting back, it was clear that we've got inadequate integrated management and governance. We've got inadequate technical and functional issues. And what is important, we see a lot of vandalism. Why do people pollute? How is it possible that in a country, we call a water scarce country, we waste more than 40% of our water? Doesn't make sense. Why is it we've got all this pollution and we don't go in a dynamic, demanding way and deal with these issues? So there's a culture from the public right to up to the attitudes. Why is it that water, they want to raise it in the new development plan, falls under a subset under economic infrastructure? Why is it not the environmental issue, the high priority issue? Why is it a subset and creates the impression it's an infrastructure issue? No, there's a culture out there that water is just there. So we have to rethink this whole thing. So going back, but behind that, there are enabling issues we have to deal with, institutional, financial issues, skills and capacity and information issues. You know there's information challenges out there. So we're trying to strategize and say, but it's not any putting up the technical issues about building dams to do demand management. If we want to change the boat, not change the deck chairs and direction, we have to rethink about what's behind it. And so we added these issues to the strategy. So in that strategic assessment, I want to put it clear to you that there are probably like about 60, 70 presentations to out there, in Dwar, etc. The first strategy, there was a lack of ownership, less than 4%. Every time there's 600 people in the audience or 300 people or 200, I ask, how many know about National Water Strategy 1? Less than 4%. So there was no ownership. I think this was a brilliant document, because it's comprehensive. It was a nice bookshelf item. But so, it was what we decided is actually a fantastic product, but it was not a life strategy. And it's like playing the game. We want to win the game, we want to live the Olympics, but we don't do the job. I mean, it's nice intent. But it's another dimension you have to make the life strategy. And what behind it is it about commitment and will to do it? I mean, it's there, but you have to set the programs. So, I've just summarized some of these issues that outside there, if you really look at the reality, is that water is not totally valued. There's a poor cultural attitude. I think we've got an incomplete governance model and management approach. And with in the document, you'll see we introduce a concept of smart thinking. Now, this smart is not just a nice word. In the Oxford Dictionary and in the Wikipedia, it says smart says being creative, think otherwise, create new issues. This is the concept of smart. What we said in Dwar and DG, I think you support us all, that we need to extend our leadership, strengthen our leadership role and commitment. There was inadequate integrated governance, some planning and alignment. I think Juan and the team did a lot of integration and alignment with the plan, the schemes, etc., and the sector involved. But overarching, like the waste licenses, etc., we have to work with the energy and the mines and say, how do we work and optimize these issues? But I think in the sector itself, the sector does not own water. I mean, it's not like municipalities. Water management is not their key function. So in the model we said, hey, should we have an extended model to mobilize the sector and make them part of the solution instead of just being reactive and wait for what to this? And to make it happen, the skills, funding, the business model, information, you can't deal with that issue. So I'm just doing a strategic assessment quickly on that one. But it's interesting to test yourself. We had the World Water Forum in Marseille this year and in France. The Rio Plus 20 was about 2 months ago. And in the UK, there was an international workshop on water security. And I just to test you on what their findings were. And the big threats in the world is water quality, fresh water security, a state risk, that means stability for development, and ecosystems. And they said, what's behind that? And that's the declaration from these areas is ineffectual leadership, financial resources, technical ability, management ability, and historic experience. And then they make proposals, and it's interesting that we have drafted this, and now this international three high-level workshops in the world come out and says, centrality of water. The second one is align with social and economic goals. Three, apply smart holistic management and change the culture. Four, collect the sector effort, mobilize the sector, and implement a water footprint for the sectors. And then funding. So I was actually thrilled to see this, but this is exactly this, the core strategies we've developed, and it's coming from the other side. Possibly we influenced them because this only came out 2 months ago. But I thought it's just confirmation that we are possibly on the right track here, that we have to address the big issues to deal with this. So just as setting the scene on the strategic side, I hope that you appreciate the strategy is not just about putting up those 9 technical issues out there, but we have to address what's behind it. And that makes it more complex because we need to develop a strategy for these high-level issues. We cannot just dictate to sectors how to do this. So those are the next 9 months is not just about consultation. This is that we have a city direction and we integrate the debate how we change these big animals. So, Chair, to confirm what you said, first of all, it's a legal requirement. We have to implement, otherwise we came to fail again, and we have to put the implementation actions out there. It's the water management system, if you read it properly in the Act. We have to focus on the outcomes, align ourselves going back to basics. It's got a huge issue about how do you align with the National Development Plan, the new growth path, etc. But then, what from this, the common sense is not a dwarf strategy. Previous was a lot of dwarf, but I think what we have to say, the country, we, the sector, we will help to do this. And that implies sector ownership, political ownership, sector accountability. So what we need to do is to have MOUs and start looking at the policies and make them accountable for what they do. So it's got a whole new dimension in this whole thinking. And the other issue, the implications, is that we need to extend our present water management approach. Traditionally, it was about building dams. We were smart dam builders, and we call it concrete and bulldozer era. But now we have to think about how we do more with our governance, better regulation, technology, discipline, smart solutions. We have to do this in the terms of the background of the country of limited funding. We will not have enough money. But the simple, out-of-the-box, stupid thing, if we lose 40% of water losses, why don't we apply this? And stretch our water. It's a simple issue. But we sit back and say, will we able to do this? And this is a big question that the media ask us all the time. You've got all these fancy issues. Do you have got the capacity and ability to do this? Does the sector have capacity? Do they have the capacity? So I think we need to seriously invest in this business. We spoke about this on integrated planning, and you also facilitated our discussions with the Planning Commission, but they committed to help facilitate integrated alignment and with these macro issues, because we need to have a formalized structure about agriculture, how to make these other things happen. And I'll just say this is really creative and innovative in our actions. But it's got serious financial implications. So therefore, we started working on the water investment framework to build up a model and clarify where are we going to fund all of this. So there's a process which we do that. So let's get back to the core story of the strategy. Now, I want to start with the water story. You know that South Africa is the 30th driest country in the world, and I was part of that. We set this up for about 189 countries. This is taking the mean annual runoff and divided by the population. But if you look at the sustainable flow in the water, we're actually the 10th driest country in the world. But this is about the mean annual runoff. You know that we've got high variability in the business, and we have to live with this because I'm quite concerned about, I was quite shocked at the media a week ago. It rained, so hey, we can't have rain. And we possibly can have floods. People don't know that we've got variability. And I think every storm and everything is a disaster and the climate changes. Variability is normal. We also have to appreciate that we have a well-developed infrastructure in most of these areas. Where we sit in the Gauteng, we sit in Cape Town, this is a well-developed area. This is security, but this actually gave us a false sense of security. It's there. In the bar, we sit with a quarter of the population, the economy, we are there. The water will be slowed. You are on the team and the DG will negotiate the Sudan, and this will happen. And this, so, we, and once I'm meeting great. But I think it's important that we understand that. But the big issue is that we still have major social and growth demands. That's why we've got the SIPs and the growth areas. How are we going to marry and integrate with this actual security? So in dealing with this, the message is our fresh water, that's our surface water, is now at its limits. Only in selected areas is surface water. So the traditional way is that. But if you open your box and you think outside the box, we've got sufficient alternative water resources. If you look at water losses, you apply reuse, you look at local resource optimization, then we talk about groundwater and look at our resources, hey, we can stretch this. If we improve our control and discipline and illegal extractions, we can stretch it. We protect our resources better and make water quality better, we can stretch it. If we operate our systems better and, you know, the dams and floods, etc., we can do this. If we desalinize the sea, then we've got lots of water out there. So in theory, and in principle, there's a lot of water. But I want to make it very clear. However, accessibility to these resources are conditional and at cost. And that's where the risk is. And the big issue is that the user viability, if you look at agriculture, the cost of water at the Wilp Dam, the raw water at the dam itself, is about 15 rand a cubic meter. Now, if you must make it available for agriculture, at the 10,000, we're talking 150,000 rand per hectare per year. It's not affordable for the sector. We don't say there should not be agriculture, but it's what we say is that the real cost is expensive. So we have to rethink how we're going to fund these issues. And there are spatial challenges. And the Olifant River, Johan will have got the slides up there, in the Popo, we're already in a deficit, and we're suffering, the environment is suffering. And then, as I say, we have to acknowledge the water quality issues. So the message is, let's stretch our water, stretch our funding, stretch our infrastructure. And if we don't do this, we have major socio-economic risks. So this picture came out of the 2004 strategy. And that's a water balance chair. You possibly saw that and Johan presented it. He's got more slides available if we do this. These are the reconciliation studies. But what's behind that story, Johan, I'm trying to highlight this issue. If you look at those red arrows, at that point in time, 12 of the water, 19 water management areas were already in the deficit. And there was a report done in 2005-06 with the team. They said that the 14 of the 19 were in deficit. So the message was already there in 2004. Wow, be careful. Be careful. And now it's 8 years later, we say, did we read what we, did you see what we read? Did we understand what we say? So this, what we say, that already the fresh water is limited. But on the other side, we've got the sea and other users. So let's optimize the business. And that's where Johan van Rooyen and the team comes in with their reconciliation studies to find solutions for these growth areas. So I put up the slide here in terms of do we have a water security risk or not. I think in terms of water resources, we say we've got water resources. But I think the first risk is that we've got a planning risk. If we don't invest in good planning, there will be a serious risk of having. If we don't apply appropriate solutions by stretching our groundwater, protecting our environment, we will have a problem. But the issue, tiniest implementation, the reconciliation studies have got comprehensive solutions for each of these growth areas. There's a whole list. But if we don't mobilize, we say it takes 10 to 15 to 20 years to plan a dam, but if we don't mobilize these issues and negotiate and fast track and do things about the process, we will have problems, like we in Cape Town. If we don't do things now, we will not have enough water in 4 years' time. There will be another crisis. So, but then if we do everything, we don't implement in time, then we've got a process. But in the end, what is coming out, and I think you alluded to this as well, functionality, and I hope that in my other presentation a week or two's time, we'll go for the MDGs. Functionality is a major, major issue. I mean, this is now sustainability, asset management, infrastructure management becomes the risk, I think, in South Africa. The condition of our works, like the electricity sector, we were all concerned, but we have to invest in that. But if you don't have the right skills, forget about this whole business. If you don't have the capacity, we will have a very serious risk. And then the business is about this agriculture. If we don't solve issues about scheme viability and affordability, is the government going to sponsor? Let's take my Wintwa Dam and the Tawa, the closed dam. That dam has got quite a few objectives. The first one, there's water for the people, 9 million cubic meters. That's a social obligation. The second one is securing water for the environment. 79 million at high risk, but very for the environment. Water for affirmative farming and new developments, water education, 11 million cubic meters. So the whole dam is a social dam. Where's the funding? Where's the funding going to come from? But not only for the capital, for the O&M, for the training, and the whole business out there. So what we say, we have to really look at this financial management model, how we can fund it, because private sector will not invest in that and get returns. So we have to think about smart issues, subsidizing, etc. In the end, the security is about how effectively we govern the business, and that whole program will have a new dimension on our leadership side. So in designing the strategy, Chair, you will find there are 3 levels of strategies. The first one that we do is the thing about macro strategies. These is now, how do we go about putting what are the centrality of all decision making and central to planning, etc. It's a macro issue. How do you do this? Then we introduce something, improve governance and management, new models, apply business management, and then the future operational side. So all of them has got different type of styles of intervention and tactics out there. I hope that you'll appreciate that we have a long argument on definition of strategy because we've got a whole split of the 30-page strategy, the spreadsheet strategy, is it the detailed action plan solving every solution in South Africa from asset mine drainage. I mean, then it becomes that thick. We have to think of the tactical, so what detail do we go? And we have to appreciate we have operational strategies on many of these themes already. What we introduced in the strategy, what was not previous, is to align with the national strategies. And we have to think about the alignment operational of implementation strategies. We also decided with the minister not to have technical criticism on the first class. It was so technical that people can't use it, so we tried to put it in a more friendly language. So I've got a lot of compliments from the many media side to say, we understand, we can read it, we know what it's all about. Other side, people say it's not technical enough, not strategic enough. So, but I think the summary, hopefully we've got something out there. But what is critical that we need debate? Because some of these issues not just what we want to set the things up there. And I think let's make it very clear that actually it's not 90 days, it's a minimum of 90 days. We need more than that, but we've got an extensive program. But I think it's important that these solutions require sector involvement in this business. And I saw some criticism that say some of these things are ambitious, but I think we have to make a choice between ambitiousness and being ambitious. And the real issue, we are at the point that we've got opportunity to change the boat because we have to change our mindset in terms of management. And the other issue is that we have challenges. We don't intervene now and do demand a conservation management. We will have problems for the next year or two. And some of these things are already a reality. And we had for 60 consecutive good years of rainfall in the summer areas. Some rainfall areas. If we have that issue and the contrast, then some people feel it. So I think the reality is out there, the water is there, but the business is out there. So put the project together, you will find this as part one, setting the scene, introducing the background, the whole principles, issues. Then we can introduce the thing about the core strategy. You will find I'll highlight those 11 core strategies. Those are high-level issues we introduced. And then in this issue, there are a lot of specific issues that come out. So we highlight four of them in the document, but I think I will highlight more now. And then In part two, or section B, we've got three now, it's actually four categories. I said there are technical strategies, so that means groundwater, demand conservation, all those technical issues. Then we introduced enabling strategies like financing, research, monitoring, and funding. Those are enabling activities. And then we included four governance support strategies: improved regulation, water allocation reform, international issues, so that you can understand those different dimensions. What is also important, we've got a support C, and thanks to our colleagues from planning, in terms of the nine new proposed, the water management areas, there's a whole chapter for each of the areas to give a strategic perspective of what must happen in the situation in each of these spatial areas to guide the solutions for these areas. What we also negotiate with all the sectors, water use sectors, it's not complete, we received one from ESCA, but in those 90 days, they all committed to develop sector-based water strategies. So we will have a chapter part D of part 4, which says municipalities and water, local government water, agricultural water, environmental water. So we are working on that with the sectors to get a comprehensive footprint on those areas out there. So I will produce the core strategies, but at some specific issues. We've got the others here to talk about the others if you want to, and then the future ones will come with the sectors in the process. So just to summarize the core strategies, the philosophy of the core strategies was to align with Chapter 1 of the Act, is that the purpose of water management is. But one of the strategic issues is that you have to think about the big things to make sure all the small things are in the same direction. We try in Afrikaans, put it on our English model, a subset, but you don't talk about the big things. So the introductions that you've got about the big things are all you're doing the small things. So all the small things go in the right direction. So the core strategies are, there are 11. The first section is about outcome and strategic type of issues. The one we introduced, the implementation of the equity policy, there's a whole feeling that equity was not properly addressed in the past. So go and apply the equity issues. The second one is putting water at the center of all planning, decision-making, and integrated development. How do we align the business? And then we put the three core issues, ensuring water for growth and development. This is now going back to basics and say, what's the purpose of water now? How do we ensure that we support these issues? But then contributing to a just and equitable South Africa. In hindsight, I think number one and four is very similar. And then what we highlighted now is protecting the environment. Ecosystems is a high priority integrated action. So those are the more outcome strategic. Then on a functional level, the operational level, we highlighted two, the implementation of water use efficiency, conservation, demand management. We felt that is now the top priority. We've got a huge infrastructure issue, but this is the critical area we have to intervene as a priority area. And the second one is integrated aspects of optimizing and stretching our water resources. What are the other options? And I highlighted that protocol. Before we build a dam, you monitor conservation management, optimize your local resources, reuse, harvesting, water harvesting, control, systems management, the whole bundle of activities. And then the one we introduced now with our fields, that's making it happen issues, improved management governance. We have to have a better water governance model, and we have to look at the level of governance. So you alluded to that a year ago. You said, what is the protocol for us? How do you decide this issue? When is developmental, etc.? We felt very strongly about this. We took your cues out there, said, let's work on that to think about what drives development and how we support it. But then the other one is that we have to move away, and not move, extend our business. We still need proper infrastructure. We can't get away from dams and infrastructure transfers. But we have to get the business principles of sustainable management in there. We have to change the mindset, and that's also aligned with the sustainable management strategy of environment affairs. How do we think about business? What is a business? And then we introduce the issue about the water investment framework. And that's not just infrastructure investment. What do you need to make this happen? What do you need to invest to make it happen? So we're in phase two now. We're busy with the extended version on that. But there are really preliminary answers on that. But I think it's important that we know what the financing model is. And then the critical one is engaging, and I want to put up the word mobilizing the private and water use sectors in the business, make them accountable. So those are the core strategies in this process. I don't know whether the detail, because my colleagues are there, but because we've got a shortened version, I think just on centrality of water, highlight a few issues that's covered in the issue. The need to address the status and position of water. You know, there's a don't-care culture. I mean, if we had a status, there will not be waste. If it was a culture, we'd have a top priority environmental issue in the development, national development plan. In the development side, I think the sectors are not totally appreciating the water situation, like the agriculture. Let's double up our irrigation. It will just happen. There's a viability issue, there's spatial issues, there's financing issues, etc. So we need to engage. So we need those issues out there. The dependency on the water, I don't know whether people really appreciate. When we presented this to the Cabinet Committee, the issue was that the Cabinet said, we want to have a proper debate. Is it the water security debate? And you were there at the launch of the National Development Plan where the President announced, right at the conclusion, the task of the Standing Commission is to report security issues, one is water security. So I thought this is critical, that how we deal with this, and we need your support in putting this whole thing about this business. And then the value of water is not just about water for economic side, the social, the life, the environmental issues. How do we extend the value concept? And this poor water culture. Just getting back to the water services side, which I'd like to produce for you some time in the future, that we're analyzing all our schemes now, and every time I say what's not happening, I said vandalized, broken pipes, stolen, vandalized. The pollution side, the attitude about just do it. So we want to make sure it's embedded in all aspects from local government, up every project, everything in the centrality. The government development side is, I think, one of the key purposes of water management as in the Act. But they will have to re-put water as a decision-making factor in all this development. It might be yes, it might be no, it might be maybe, it might be yes, but in terms of the development. So for each of these areas, we need to respond that, and I also appreciate that you actually ask us to respond sometimes on these issues, but water and the IPAPs. I remember we had a presentation on this. How do we respond to the growth plan? How do we respond to this? And I think that forcing us to think about what's our position, but we have to formalize it. What's our role in food security? The electricity. And this issue about the security side comes back when there's a chapter on water use allocation. There's in the previous strategy was highlighting the different priority. First priority is the reserve for basic services environment, and the second one is international obligations, and there's a whole chapter showing the international obligations. But the third one was initially strategic use. And if the proposal changes the answer, says first for equity and then for strategic use. So what is strategic use? Isn't that what you decide in Cabinet like the Mzuru? Isn't that a strategic priority? So we have to redefine this. Isn't electricity really a security risk? Is electricity risk? Well, we can do this, you so possibly see the media papers. So we want to open this debate that we say, how can we prioritize these issues here? And then the spatial and conditional areas. I mean, we can't have areas in all areas. Like some areas, there's limitation. And then there's global development, the role of the sectors, the accountability of the sectors. Water for growth is not just new water. The mines sort of start to take accountability for their pollution. The integrated planning, the record statement, and the criteria. So I just highlight there are quite a few issues. The same with smarter governance. I'm just highlighting two or three of these areas. Smarter governance. People often were smart. But in this is a definition. But the first smart is a fundamental issue to do governance. But back to basics. If we can do the basics right, then we will really succeed. The dwarf sector leadership is a critical one. Improve governance, improve planning, improve organizing, institutionalization, that's what Douglas Wazza's job is there to improve regulation. And then improve interdepartmental and sectoral planning, decentralizing water management, and then the sector mobilization. So these are the issues that's being debated in that area. And then improve governance of management. You know, promoting sustainable resource management. There's a resource management side from generating water ability. Well, in the FIPA studies, there are maps showing where the water is generated. Should we protect them like the old mountains areas? And what I propose, let's go protect those areas, declare them protected areas. Should we declare our top priority ecosystems protected areas? Those are proposals. Then we have to look at the social use of the resource and for economic good. But then we set also infrastructure, and then the business issues, maintenance, asset management. So in those areas, I just highlight a few of these areas. The other one is the investment framework. I think I was also surprised. It was interesting to attend the parliamentary meeting on the National Development Plan. Investment. What would it take to invest? So I think it's critical that we have a subset, and this has also been approved by cabinet in principle for discussion. But the investment framework is infrastructure plus an institutional investment plus. And the message out there that we need a financing model because we don't have any, well, we need to fund all of this with the limited resources. And one of the issues, the development of criteria, what's coming first, what's going to become second? I had an informal session with Trishy last week, and I said, you're not getting that money, stop that. So that's part of the investment prioritization. So there's a lot of negotiations on that area. And you know that we've got at least 50% deficit on our funding. So we're not going to realize all these fancy issues. It's not fancy. These are critical areas which you highlighted. So if you don't know how to do it, what then? What's plan B? What's plan C? So I'm just highlighting a few of these core ones. Then these core strategies are supported by seven technical strategies, water infrastructure, the dams and the climate change strategy, disaster management, groundwater development and management, reuse and desalination, and we've added one, water systems optimization, just to support the big issues. Then we've got four enabling strategies at this point in time, monitoring information. We feel that information is critical. There are three messages, and that is we need that information. And one of the challenges in the strategy, in the strategy one, and Jan, you must help me, that when you started strategy one in 2000, we started with an extensive program to put a water balance together for 4 years to have that data available. We didn't do this stuff. So we don't have the detail, but we have the reconciliation studies, we have the internal strategic perspectives. So for the growth areas, we've got water balance, but not for our country. So we don't have the detail, but we've got enough of strategic confidence to say what's happening. But what is the balances we need, what as required by the Act? So we can't provide it in detail as requested, but we have to rethink this as a business. But what's also the other message from our hydrologist, Pittman, I don't know Dr. Pittman, he did a study on our gauging stations and the modeling, and the investment in those areas, we're back to 1958. Equal in terms of investment. So we've got all this climate change and systems management, water quality and disaster management, but we're not investing in monitoring. So we need to really address this to have sufficient information. The capacity and skills is a critical area, both from government side and the sector. And then research and innovation. Fortunately, the Minister of Science and Technology already was the first to hand it up and said, you've got our commitment to our partnership to do work on these issues. And then the last one was the water education reform, institutional arrangements, water regulation, and international management. I want to highlight a few issues that came out, which will be discussed later on. The first one is the reality of our water situation. If we don't deal with this, we will have challenges. We have to acknowledge external impacting factors, the economy, the drive. It's not only the money available, but also if we push for all these SIPs and other mining, what about the pollution? What about water availability for these years? We go for fracking, they need water, etc. We have to deal with these issues. Aligned with the macro strategies, how are we going to apply the smart management? How are we going to change the model? At skill capacity, but I want to highlight the water footprint and the areas. We talk about a water footprint, and at the moment, internationally, water footprint is about how much water you use. But you lose the footprint, and when you step back, that's where the footprint is, the real definition of footprint. So we put this together, the total water footprint concept, that you could look at the economic value of that sector. What do they contribute? And the whole value chain. We have to look at this. That's the driver. But we also look at the social contribution and jobs and how they improve the life. But then we have to look at the negative side and the environmental impact side. What is that footprint? And then we have to look at the water use efficiency, how effective they are using water. And that equals, we don't only look at that scheme, but the value life cycle of that mine or that development. And that gives a positive and negative. But what we agreed to with the most other sectors in this next 3 months to sort out the first order balances and the perspectives on the value chain, that we can have a picture, what do they mean for SAFI to help us doing that. So we're introducing that. The other one is that the protected areas, these maps did work. I had extensive support from the environmental groups from different organizations, and they produce these sensitive areas on degradation, and they requested that it's in the proposal that we clear these areas as protected areas in this whole process. So just highlight those issues. Some high-level issues, value-driven water management, equity, human needs. We have to look at the citizens' voice, how we involve communities, make it everybody's business. It's very important that we highlight that it comes to how we involve communities and the sector and the civil society. And this whole thing about the environmental water management, how do you facilitate that? And then the paradigm shift from technical to the value-driven from resource to management to governance and management technology. Share the way forward. I'll just give you a quick overview of this comprehensive thing. It's a massive issue of different dimensions and levels. But the cabinet already approved the first Gazette took place on Friday. It says a minimum day of 90 days consultation period. Now, we intend a lot of national workshops. And there will be 9 provincial workshops that involve the provinces and locally. Targeted workshops with marginalized groups. Sector work sessions, we have identified at least 10 sectors to work of agriculture with the departments themselves and the extended sectors, environment, municipalities, local government. This extensive media campaign, and we've got a dynamic website. It's not just a website you will pick up. You put all the documents, all the communication, and let's talk and let's argue. I hope it's not arguments, I hope it's positive contribution. In this whole process, we will also have to finalize the product, and we can't wait until the end. We hope that we've got a progressive product improvement and set up teams that we work on the product itself as a sector issue. But in this whole process, we want sector ownership and partnership, but we also want to do an implementation plan. So when we finalize documents, we know exactly how we can implement this business. Then we go for second gazetting. The optimistic route is hopefully this financially was about March, but it all depends on all the comments and participation. And then the critical one which we have to plan is the implementation execution. We have to set up our systems and oversight governance. And then I just highlight that a National Planning Commission, as the President said, let's make sure that we've got a water security plan. So this is the way forward, and the 90 days deliverables, so let me just confirm with you what we want out of this. The first one is ownership and understanding of the sector, the public. Let's understand this. The second one is to obtain input and consolidate all these inputs. Then we have to draft the final product. From all these inputs, we have to put it all together. But the big one is obtaining sector ownership. We cannot go ahead if we don't have sector ownership and commitment. So we want to establish this macro strategy alignment. The sector water strategies will be included in the strategy, sector water footprints, and potentially MOUs, MOAs to sign off that this is how we're going to do it together. We've got a lot of positive from the business entities from agriculture, environment, they already committed. Then the water security strategy that we have to make sure that we align with that. The most of it is very clear implementation plan. We need to exactly say what is the team we can implement and where and when. But in this whole process, to oversee this, we cannot just go out and hope it will happen. So we need the governance plan and management structure to drive it as a formal program and a dedicated program. My top management is behind me, but the dual leadership framework and the capacity must be addressed as how to lead this process. We need to commit ourselves to make it happen. And then the important, as you stated, the communication strategy and action. Those are the 90 days actions. You also have the sector engagement process. There are national workshops, big issues. We've highlighted these are different streams. We talk about political engagements. The portfolio committee I put up there as a top priority. But they include your public hearings as contributions. But they always have got the clusters, and as I remember from the approval process with cabinet, 5 ministers that I remember the deputy president made it very clear there will be a type of cabinet discussions on this as well. On a provincial level and spatial workshops, and then the high level, I call it high level strategic issues. How we can talk about integrated planning with the Economics Development and National Planning Commission, and I think you can help with this, but how we put this up there with the big bang strategies and promote this action. Then for all these support, the technical issues, there will be theme-specific workshops on each of those themes. And then we will engage one-on-one with the sectors, one-on-one with the department, the heads. We already committed with the DGs, etc., but we also have extended sector engagement, and then the communities and civil society streams. So that whole plan is being put together of a framework of actions. The engagement, we know that everybody can't do things, so there will be workshops, there will be one-on-one engagements, but there's web-based communication. We've also received emails and documentation, so we put them together to put it together, the communication strategy, but we also know that we will have a lot of formal forums. So all the formal forums and committees will also produce input and actions. This is just a picture of the website as it's there. It's got extensive context, and you can click on your chapter because it's otherwise just you want to commit, you respond. There will be an answer giving, thank you for committing. A dedicated leader, we will workshop. You can post it, and then there's a chat room on it, and you can see all the documentation. We will put all the support documentation on those teams. The FIPA maps, etc., will come on board to show all the teams' business. And that's been initiated. And there are the chapters. You can go to each chapter and summarize it and drop it down. So that's an overview. I trust that it's a bit of a mindful and mouthful in a few minutes, but in designing the system, there will be gaps in the detail. But hopefully we've got tough strategies as well. But I trust that we can change South Africa, and as I say, one good characteristic is common to all leaders is the ability to make some things happen. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. That is a mouthful. Obviously, this is an overview, so you'll also be able to ask questions later when you get into the specifics of these. But are there any questions at this stage, comments? It seems to me that it's really difficult to take in all this stuff, but just listening to you, Mr. Van Sale, and the department, there's a lot of good threads there that I like. The centrality of water, what we've been hammering you about for years now, that you must be the leader on water issues, etc., etc. Those things are coming through nicely, and then all the different things. What is difficult for someone like me to take in, of course, is that then, once you've said that, then you, of course, bombard us with information, and it's difficult to work out, you know, the kind of importance of different things, because everything is not equally important. So for me sitting here, it's difficult to work out what's important and what's not, and what you regard and what the document regards. So that obviously we'll only be able to find out when we engage more, that we'll find out those things. So at the moment, very difficult to engage with the specifics. So I want to say what I do like is to see that there's method, and in the method, there's a lot of the themes that this committee has raised, I think, that's coming through. Which is a good thing. I suppose the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and it's when we get to the detail that we'll start seeing. I mean, for example, as you give me the input now, I don't have a clue. For example, one of the issues we've raised is the chapter on water allocation in the Act seems to us to be completely and utterly outdated. Now, listening to you and your input, it seems to me that you maybe have dealt with it, but I'm not sure whether you've dealt with it. You know what I mean? So it's difficult to then get to grips. But again, as I say, that wasn't the idea of your input. Yours was now to give an overview, and then we'll go to the specifics. So when we go to the specifics, we'll start seeing those things. So it is a bit difficult at this stage to already raise things and so on. While I'm waiting to see the hands, let me make another point. The one thing I do think you can do is go and talk to the people that process the climate change paper. It's your sister department, environment. Because the one thing I was highly impressed with is they came with a green paper, and it's very similar to what you've got now. They came with a green paper, they consulted us, we had public hearings, we made interventions, and they then went back, and they were able to take government and stakeholders with them and to substantially change the green paper in the white paper within a period of February to June. That's how quickly they were to do it. So they found ways of engaging their colleagues and making major changes and shifts what was in the green paper to the white paper. And they got consensus on it. Now, there they did something right. I mean, I wasn't part of the process. I'm not sure all the things they did. But clearly, they took the government structures particularly with and got them to make major changes. I mean, literally, if I talk day and night, that's what I'm talking. That's how big the changes were from the one to the other, within a period of 4 months in government. That doesn't happen easily. So there may be some tips you pick up there from them, that the way they've done it, to make sure that they're taking everyone with it. Because it's absolutely vital, as you say, that when the strategy this time is passed, it's not like the first strategy. I mean, the first strategy, absolutely no one knows. They don't know there's a legal obligation that every time they make a decision in this act, they must look at the strategy and see how they fit their decision into the strategy to promote the strategy. I mean, if we don't do that, then this thing becomes a red letter. And what this document then becomes is a trap. It's a trap for decision-making, because anyone that wants to fight water issues goes and looks at this document and see how they can get people to say, but you haven't applied this document. Then every decision that's taken is going to be legally unacceptable. So that's why I asked the question in the beginning, what is the effect of this trap compared with a white paper or something else? And how much more detail do you have in this than you have in a white paper, for example? Because, as I say, it then becomes a trap. It can become a policy trap that you get caught in, because you put things there, no one actually applies it, and then someone comes along and says, but there's a black and white. There the law says in section so-and-so you must apply it in your decision-making. Your decision is illegal, and you can really start stagnating your decision-making process. So these are the things we have to look at as we go forward, DG, that we streamline that and we make very clear. And it's very vital that we take people with us. And then, of course, my whole bare butt is, as much as I appreciate the National Policy Development Plan, I just think that they have not seriously looked how they place water in that document. I mean, you know, you can't tell me that it has to be a subsection of kind of industrial development. I mean, it's kind of the whole social development of water and the place that water plays in the society. And within a developmental approach, if you're going to look at purely in terms of the industrial side of it, I mean, clearly, I mean, that is just wrong. It is just wrong. Now, we've made this point before at different levels, but as I know, Cabinet is just had a Lakhotla where they've looked at this document, so I don't know to what extent they've adopted it and so on. But even if it's been adopted, that makes no reason why we shouldn't still push it the way that we see it has to be done. And this strategy then becomes already a way of interpreting that national planning development plan as far as water is concerned. Okay? And then you've got another avenue in the Infrastructure Commission of the president, where you can also make a certain input. So, as an overview, I must say I feel relatively comfortable what the overview is. And I think I saw one hand. Was it you, Mr. Morgan? Please go ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thank you to Mr. Patel for the presentation. It's obviously a massive amount to take in, and I don't think it's any of our intention to try to take it in a session. We've got public hearings to do that, which will help clarify our own views on this matter, and will probably put us in a position to ask the department at the conclusion more direct questions about specific points. We really need, obviously, experts to come and give us their opinion on the strategy. Just some initial thoughts, though. Firstly, thank you for the work. It's a massively comprehensive piece of work. In many sense, it's got some hard data, and in another sense, it's actually a manifesto. In the sense of, this is what we want to do, these are our commitments, these are our intentions going forward. And there's nothing wrong with that. you quite correctly, Mr. Zale, pointed out a key thing of which you appreciated that we've highlighted before is the governance and management side of the water sector. And I'm glad that was highlighted, and I'm glad that there are some current proposals on the table now with regards to CMAs and water boards in particular. One of the things, though, which obviously even I would like to engage with in the public hearings about, and I'd like to comment now. This whole, besides, I mean, it's, I don't want to kind of flip it, but I mean, it's relatively easy to design a governance framework or to change it or whatever, but this whole document will rise or fail on the availability of skills in the sector. This is like a water bible, at least the second gazetted version will be. And having committed water managers and skilled water managers in the broad sector, and by that I mean everywhere from municipalities to CMAs to water boards to national departments and to farming organizations and corporates, I mean, that's the way we envisage water management is players from various sectors coming together and of course, the department ultimately governs. But that's my big fear about the future, quite frankly, is, and you quite, you know, you put in protocols of where we need to find our water and what we need to exploit first before we look at the next option. I get all of that. And much of that isn't new. It's nice to have it recodified, though. What concerns me is that we don't have the right people, I'm not really right, we don't have sufficient people to make the choices and to govern. And I'm thinking here particularly of as you go down the chain towards municipalities and within these proposed CMAs. And what I fear is I don't know where we're going to get these people from. Unless we start turning project managers and other managers into water managers. So to what extent, you know, are you highlighting this in the document, and is this an area which is sufficiently developed, that is the attainment of skills? And I mean, you'll appreciate more than anyone, and my colleagues who are stalwarts of the department will, that water management has lots of different parts. You have engineering, and you have quality, and you have allocations, and you have the legal side, and all of that. So, the one part, I mean, where are we going to find these skills? Because we don't have them. And the other side, and this is, I guess, the view that relates to the governance structure, is are we envisaging new governance structures that take into account the limitation of skills? Or are we moving into a position, or do we continue to be aspirational in the sense that this is the ideal, which I think we all want, but we know in our hearts that we actually aren't sufficient skills in, say, the medium period to be able to sufficiently resource those structures. And one of the problems with CMAs, I mean, only two were ultimately set up, is a resource problem. And it's predominantly a human resource problem. So I'd like your comments on that. The second thing is, and it relates to this. Now, whatever the content of the document, and I've read much of it, it's important to have the consultation, and I think it looks very thorough. I'm particularly impressed with the online nature of it. But we've got currently water managers around South Africa, and they may or may not participate in consultation. But once March, April next year comes and this is gazetted finally, with amendments all out, to what extent are we going to get our water managers to actually understand the contents of this document? Because I wouldn't want to make too many assumptions that because it just exists, and I think you it early on, you know, a nice book for the bookshelf. I know you own it. I know our colleagues over here own it. And you particularly own it because this is a kind of holistic document and you're required from your position to take a holistic view of the water sector. But I mean, what I think we need to be doing is, beyond the consultation, the next stage actually is to putting in processes where we kind of force our water sector managers to take ownership, almost a accredited courses or workshops, you know, certificate based, so that you actually understand the context of the process. Because there are a lot of nuances, Mr. Kinsale, in this report, and I noticed the way you were presenting it, and I wouldn't have presented it in any other way. A lot of these things are about choices, and a lot of these things are merely guidelines. I mean, there's a hierarchy in a particular decision. Is it the only way to do it? Well, never. I mean, of course, every situation is unique. There are certain imperatives. I mean, the transformation in the sector, particularly water for productive use, isn't good enough yet. Whereas access to water is better than it's ever been. Where I'm going with this, Mr. Mazzell, is that the document is so big and so, and thank you for that, because one of the criticisms MPs often give is not enough detail. I actually think there's sufficient detail, more than enough. But to go with my human resources argument, you need your water managers to be committed to a course, because this, funny enough, doesn't actually contain all the answers. The answers are on the ground and in the moment and in the situation which is being analyzed. This is the kind of thinking and the philosophy that goes into water management. And so, I mean, our water managers obviously need to understand the document, understand it, the philosophy, basically, because that's how you make informed decisions. That's how, in a difficult situation, after considering all things, you make that decision to allocate X water to Y individual and not to Z individual, or to reduce X water, or to, you know, put up the price of water if that's what you're involved in, because you know that it's the only way you can pay for infrastructure and maintenance of infrastructure. So we really do need ways for people, for water managers across government to live the document post that. And I hope that in your implementation strategy, that is going to be part of it. Because the fear, of course, is that it does go onto people's bookshelves here and there. And there's, you know, obviously lots that you can do out of this, like the formalization of the management stuff. And acting on where the deficits. I mean, they're very practical things I get out of that. But what I'm really talking about is that culture of the water manager around South Africa and what we're going to do to do that. Because my final point here is if we accept that not only do we have a water deficit in certain places, at least, but that we have a deficit in skills, then we're going to have to expect these managers to work under increasing pressure and to work even more creatively in the context of all the imperatives around water management. So, Chair, my initial comments are really rather philosophical about this, and I look forward to going into drilling down into it during the public hearings. I'm mostly interested at the moment in culture and the skills that will give this particular document real life. Thank you, Chair, for that.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
Mr. Chair. I'm not going to repeat anything that you have said, except that my two comments certainly was about the skills, because I really do believe that we have a serious lack of skill in that area. And then secondly, also just around about the water awareness. I mean, you've given us a lot of a conversation around that, and I'm just asking, what are your thoughts and how are you going to address this major concern in the culture of water awareness, considering that we're losing 40% of our water? So those are the two that really stand out for me, our lack of skills and certainly a lack of water awareness across the board, whether it be the water management or just me running my tap. You know, it's certainly we're losing a lot of water. We need to address that. But thank you very much for that thought-provoking presentation. And, of course, as we go further, we'll ask the different questions, I'm sure. Thank you.
Chair, I'll invite a friend just to make a limited comment, because listening a number of the observations, questions are actually covered in presentations, even the one, Chair, you were talking about, the water allocation reform. It features in our presentation, climate change, even the skills, there is a presentation on that. But be that as it may, I think some of the areas which can briefly comment and then allow time, if it, we still have it, to have those presentations.
Yeah, briefly, I agree with that. Briefly go into some of the issues.
Thank you. As I said, I'll just briefly, sort of your water allocation reform, you know, this, the equity issues.
I have to comment on that. Fine. I mean, I'm saying, I'm using it as an example. When you give us the overview, I know we've raised it, but I can't see whether it's there or not, so it's difficult for me to comment on it. So I'm happy to wait for the inputs and then see if you've probably dealt with it or
not. This is a very interesting one. How do we get water allocations on a sort of economic side, that conflict? The second one is just on, thank you, I think I could reach it, something about skills has been highlighted as a critical area. And thank you for that input. Just three quick answers on that one. The first one is that there is a skills, let's acknowledge that challenge out there. The second one is let's acknowledge the different levels from the governance side, from our dwarf side, the ability to lead this process and guide with passion, the ability of the sector and the enabling sector. So, We also have to look at the opportunities out there. Now, before that, I have to also look at the time frames. We need to start changing things in the next 5 years. So we have to have a short, medium, and long-term turnaround action. How can we realize what we have, stretch what we have? And I discussed with universities, I said, you know, some engineering, they told me that there are 200 students finalizing at Stellenbosch and Tetis per year, and 30% of them don't have jobs. So this is a new generation, but you still need strong leadership, existing leadership as well. So in DWA itself, I know that we've committed, we're starting actually next week with internal training and building the capacity and ownership in DWA of all the staff to make that happen. We also have a partnership with the sectors, and there's a dedicated commitment from Eskom and agriculture sector to really own this issue. And then we have a dedicated chapter in our team so that we can deal with the detail. On your issue around the ownership of values, this is a critical area. And the core one is our communication campaign, a media campaign with the people. That's a dedicated action to change the value system. But there's a second part is to apply some discipline. You start paying for your water, et cetera. So it's associated with practice and discipline, the reality issues. People start feeling it and touching it. So there's an unpacking issue. But I hope that we can unpack that. And as the Chair, you said, we have a posse, an improved comprehensive tactical issue of how to do it. But thanks for that. I think that these are just summarizing the issues. Yeah.
Yes, on the issue of skills as well, you know, it is one thing to talk about skills and one thing to have skills available and the time given to acquire those skills. For sometimes you set yourself in attempting to, for the kickoff of the project, but don't you find that skills are not yet available. So to acknowledge something, but to have them available is another thing.
Chair, again, because there's a presentation on skills, I would rather defer and see whether it actually does not address some of the questions.
The interesting thing is that is your 90-day actions and deliverables. what I see from that is out of this process there are at least going to come out three things. Firstly, you're going to draft a final strategy too out of all these processes. Secondly, you're going to draft what's called an implementation plan. Now that is of some interest of me. I've in the past very strongly urged departments, even when they pass legislation, to also draft implementation plan. I'm interested to engage with you at some stage. What will an implementation plan mean in the strategy? Because the strategy is something to be used for others to implement the laws. Now we're saying there must be an implementation. So it's I'm all for implementation plans, don't misunderstand me. But I think we must get it right what we mean in this context and what it is we're expecting. So that's it. And then thirdly, of course, a communication strategy. What that means, how that will do things, et cetera, et cetera. So I see from those deliverables of yours, those are the three things that should come out of this this process for the next, let's say, 6 months, out of it at the end of it. And we would want to, of course, be very closely involved. I mean, even when you give your final document, we would like to do what we did with the white paper on climate change. If we feel like it, we would want to have more hearings at that stage. Not necessarily to change the document, but to see whether, as happened with the climate change, it came from a document that was very problematic to a very good one. And through those public hearings, that's the fact that we acknowledge that it's a very good document now, we fully support it, etc., etc. And these are one or two things that we think should be looked at further. So, you know, that is the kind of thing I'm foreseeing in the next 6 months. I agree with Fred. I know Halkhout was strong about it, but I'm more in agreement with Fred. Let's not try and rush this thing through in 90 days. We're already 2 years late with it. Let's do something proper. Something can honestly give us leadership as a department in the water sector for the next 5 years. I'd rather let people all buy into it and that becomes the document by which they march than we have some people that are half obliged just because we rushed it by a month or two, okay? So I do think that we should, now that you've got a document on the table, now we should be flexible and now we move with it, that we take our people with us on this issue. And if it needs a bit more time, then we should use that a bit more time, okay? Particularly, you know, the other thing that worries me, at the end of the year, and there are some parties that are more worried about certain things that are going to happen in December than that's going to happen from now till December. And I would rather want us to get something solid out of the process and not to rush too much with it, okay? All right, let's start the next one. I'm not too sure why you put communication second. It's not the kind of thing I would do. I mean, I think communication is very important, but I'd rather want to hear everything, and at the end, someone tells me now, this is what we're going to do with this thing.
Yeah. Our thinking is like your chair, in fact, I'm going to outline how we intend approaching, with your permission, planning for this water security. I was going to go to that.
And then
there are other areas like in the hierarchy of ecosystems that would follow, and then the skills one, we had it. But at the end, we just wanted to cover the core activities. That's our approach. Communication will come at the end. With that, Chair, we're going to invite Johan van Rooyen to...
Which page is that? Planning?
So, that's the... Where in the original? That's water security in the original plan. Core strategies and support actions, water security use and efficiency, stretching the special perspective.
We've got little time, so I suggest members just grab tea and that while we're busy, okay? And while we listen. I still don't know which page, which paragraph, which part. Huh? part three is highlighting specific issues and implications. That's part three. So what part is it? Huh? Part 4.1. Alright, so there's no page numbers. Alright, it looks like this. Part 4.1, water security. Okay? Alright, let's hear.
Chair, honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm having some feedback. Is it okay? The sound system. Although we may have heard that there were very few people that really looked at the National Water Resource Strategy 1, it very much guided the work that we've done since the publication of the first water, National Water Resource Strategy. What is important to understand is that the original strategy gave us very important overviews in terms of the statistics on demand and availability and the water balances. And from that, we could determine important strategies to reconcile the requirements and the available resources. We should just remember that we are sharing our rivers with our neighboring countries. And if you look at the map, you can see the Orange River Basin, the Limpopo, and the Kumati and the Sutu River Basins that we share with our neighbors. And we always need to consider their requirements for water as well in our national strategy. And it is given a very high priority in terms of the National Water Act that we should then honor those obligations. Fred has already shown this slide, but I just need to again emphasize that if you look at the national picture there of the total resource available and then the what was required, you can see a positive balance. And if you only focused on that, you may have thought it's all okay. But then Fred also indicated that if you go to the 19 water management areas, you find the 19 of them has already had a problem already in the year 2000. And if you look at the Olifants as an example, and I don't know which suits you best, but if I point to that area, you can see that there was a huge difference between the requirements, which is much more than the available water. So if you, the moment you go from the national picture into the detail, you see that there were problems already in the year 2000. I don't want to go into this in a lot of detail, but in all the work we're doing in terms of the availability of water, we consider the quality of the water so that we make sure that when we say water is available, it is of sufficient quality. So the national strategy, the first national strategy, gave us in Chapter 2 in Appendix D a summarized vision of the water resource situation. And it addressed the scarcity of fresh water in South Africa and told us that fresh water is limited and very unevenly distributed. So the situation varies from area to area. And the list of strategies that was already published in Strategy 1 was water conservation and demand management. So this is not something new. It was already in Water Strategy 1. That surface water resource management in terms of operation of our dams must improve. That we need to manage and use groundwater. That we have to reuse water. Eradicate invasive alien vegetation. Reallocate water. Develop more surface water resources where it's possible. And transfer some of that water where we need it. What is interesting, though, is that desalination, specifically of seawater, was mentioned in the strategy, but not summarized as one of the strategies. And you will see that difference when we come to what we know now. So in building on the National Strategy 1, we realized that that information was only given at the broad overview level. And we cannot use that information, for instance, to plan the building of a dam. We need more information. So more detail was required. And after Strategy 1, we developed so-called internal strategic perspectives, but that was still very much on the catchment management strategy level and not detailed enough for considering the options. So we then came up with what we've called reconciliation strategies. And we've done that for large systems, and I'll go into that in more detail, as well as all the other towns in the country. So in terms of the large systems, we've looked at the possible future water requirement scenarios, in consultation with the users. So this is not a water affairs study. It was done in consultation with all the users in those areas. We've looked at all the possible water resources and the other interventions that we could introduce and investigate the different methods to reconcile the requirements with the resources, and then made recommendations for the development and implementation of those interventions. And Fred already mentioned how important implementation is. This is just a map showing the areas that were covered or is being covered by these large reconciliation strategies. And we took our key from the National Spatial Development Perspective that was published by the State President's Office. And that document, the NSDP, shows in the red the big National Spatial Development Perspective.
Was on the website?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they indicated the areas where the biggest contribution or the biggest part of the economy was generated, and that's those red circles showing where the biggest share of the economy was generated. And we said, well, if we're talking development in South Africa, we need to ensure that those areas are properly covered with water reconciliation strategies. So we have done, we've covered those areas or are in the process of doing that. Now, in terms of assumptions and principles, we're working with high future requirement scenarios. So in consultation with the users, we're looking at what's the high scenario for water requirement. What do you think is the highest likely scenario? Because it is always possible to delay the final implementation of a measure. You can always delay the building of a dam because the construction period of the dam is maybe 5 years, but the whole planning process can take you up to 15 years. So you better do the planning and the preparation for that. But it is impossible to bring that forward. If you haven't done that planning, it's impossible to bring it forward. And in that work, we've taken account of the normal huge variability in South Africa's climate, and we should never forget that we're living in a country with very huge variability, even before we start talking about climate change. But we've also looked at the possible implications of climate change. That implies that we need to monitor and adjust these strategies as we go forward. This is not work that we've done and put on a shelf. We're implementing or continuing with these strategies through what we call strategy steering committees. So for each area, there's a permanent strategy steering committee with the responsibility to monitor the implementation, to update those strategies, and to communicate about them. And the members typically consist of the department of provinces, municipalities, the CMAs, water boards, water user associations, and various water groups and or user groups and interested parties. So, Jeff, we're very proud of the fact that we're actually seeing cooperative governance in action in those steering committees, where people have learned to recognize that the problem of water supply is not water affairs' problem, but it is our problem, and we all need to work to make or contribute to make it work. And then obviously this information is also supplied to the infrastructure investment framework that Fred already talked about. So we've completed strategies for eight of these, Western Cape Amatola, as shown on the graph, and we're currently busy with the Lebowu-Letaba system, with the Orange River system, the area around Nelspruit, Mbombela, and then Richards Bay. And this information is all on the departmental website, and it will be linked to the National Water Resource Strategy webpage so that you can easily access that information. There are documents that show the work that we've done, but I will not go into that. What is important is that...
I hope we've got copies of that.
Copies were provided earlier, but we can always make copies again available to you.
Just make sure that was provided. We're always the last to receive.
But this was a while ago. The next level then was to say, well, we've covered those large systems, but we've then also gone into all the other towns in the country with studies that started in 2009. We had a 3-year program to cover all the other towns in the country. it was divided into four project areas, and then we produced a total of 814 of these strategies for all the other towns and villages, and some of them are actually clustered. We completed it by March 2012, and they're all available on the departmental website. And you can go into this website where it is divided either per water, per province or water management area or DMs or local municipalities, and you can click on any of those and you will find the strategy for that town or cluster of towns. I will just quickly go through three of the large systems just to introduce you to some of the concepts that we have. Okay, so the first one is the Western Cape Water Supply System, and very relevant while you spend some time in Cape Town to look at what is happening here. And this is the Cape Town area, but we're actually talking about a much larger area supplied also from dams in the neighboring water management area. And this year I just want to point to the screen is in just a picture of one of the scenarios for the Western Cape. We have the existing water resource shown there in blue, and that was the introduction of the Berg River Dam that increased the resource. We have the high water requirement scenario on that slide. But then immediately, water conservation demand management can drop the demand from where it was there to this line. And this is what we're actually planning for. We say in this scenario we will achieve our goals with water conservation demand management, and we will actually have to supply that line. And there is the actual line, so at that stage Cape Town and this area was actually heading towards this line, although we were not exactly where we wanted to be, but at least there are successes in demand management. Now, listed there are a number of possible interventions there. And they mentioned there, unfortunately, like engineers, we're always trying to confuse you. So they listed from top to bottom there, but this is going from bottom to top on the other side. So the full flow phase one is actually that one, and then the Lawrence River and so on until you get to the reuse of effluent at the top. But you can see that there are options that we have available to supply this demand line if we introduce them in time.
What's this called on your website?
On our website.
You said this is all on the website.
This is on the Western Cape Reconciliation Strategy, Chair.
Yeah, but this, you said all this information is on the website, the towns and
all. Yes, the all towns, it's a separate
one. Under what heading?
Sure.
There's shortcuts here on your thing.
There's shortcuts given on the thing. Can I give it to you after the presentation?
You tell me if you're on the website. I go to your website.
Oh, you're already there.
No, I can't find it.
So
I'm catching you out as you're talking.
No.
I'm catching you out. So you live behind your head, man.
Chair, I said we will link it to the National Water Resource Strategy website. They're all there. Some not
okay,
in
go
the...
Ahead,
yeah,
go
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is one scenario. So you can then see that we have reconciliation strategies or options available to reconcile the requirement with the resource. But this is one scenario. There's another scenario, and this is one where the success with demand management is not as big as we hope it would be. So you can see there's a smaller reduction in the demand. And we've also introduced a scenario of possible climate change. So, and this is very much, almost want to say, sucking your thumb, because from the scientific work, they cannot really tell you what the effect will be. But we've taken a possible scenario that the available resources from the current supply will reduce in future due to climate change. Now, you can see, and that is why there's a decline in the existing water resource. What that then means is that we have to introduce other or new interventions to solve that problem. The first thing is that we will not be in time for a short while in the beginning, and we may have to face higher risks in the beginning if we have climate change linked to demand management not that successful. But the important thing is that in this area,
we're actually adding desalination of seawater in the end because there are no other options available. So if in this scenario would happen, then we've reached the point where we have to desalinate seawater and use that. So the other important thing is to just look at the costs, and we've done a report on the broad costing in terms of this planning. How much would it cost? And you can see there again the surface and groundwater resource development would cost something between 2 and 4 rand a cubic meter. If you go to reuse of water, we're close to 8 rand a cubic meter. And the desalination of seawater would be in the order of 12 rand. Now, this is a significant increase in the cost. So when you read in the strategy that the desalination of seawater is relatively higher than the other options, that is what we're looking at. But here, we need to remember that half a liter of water like this, you would buy this in the shop for 5 rand and without probably thinking too much about it. That would translate into a sum of 10,000 rand a cubic meter. What we're talking about here is 12 rand a cubic meter. Okay, I don't think any of us will take a shower in this water, but the important thing is we need to understand that relative price of water. There's a report on that also available on the departmental website. Now, the Western Cape strategy then boils down to the implementation of water conservation demand management, that we complete feasibility studies for three options: a surface water option, a reuse option, and a desalination of seawater option. And you can ask me, why are we looking at desalination of seawater if we have it on the graph as one of the later ones? But if we're worried about climate change, that might be the option that we would want to introduce because it's not linked to the climate. It is linked to the seawater that's there. So we're doing the feasibility studies on this, and the strategy steering committee will, by middle of next year, will recommend to the minister which one of these augmentations should actually be implemented for then additional water by 2019. If we go to the Fall River system, we're looking at a very complex system, but importantly is that the Fall Dam is at the center of this, and we have schemes supplying water into the system to the Vaal. Then we're supplying water to the Gauteng area, and the southern part of Gauteng is actually draining back to the Fall River. So the effluent from the southern Gauteng is actually coming back into the Fall River, and we add to that the salts from the mine effluent, and we have water in this system, bottom part of the system, that is not acceptable to use. So what we've done in the past is to release water from Fall Dam, clean water, low salinity water, to dilute the salts in the Fall River system. Now, if we then look at the reconciliation strategy, you can again see there's a line for the high demand scenario and the drop because of water conservation demand management and also the eradication of the unlawful use. We've got the available water, but then you see a drop in that. And that was when, in future, we start to pump the high salinity water from the mines into the system again, and we have to then release water from the Fall Dam to dilute that water. So that's the drop in the actual supply. And from this you can see that even adding for the Hari Dam, we don't have enough to supply that shortage. But if you take that mine water out of the system by desalinating it, or the salts from the mine water by desalinating it and supplying that to the users, then you see a much better picture of that drop is then not occurring. We have the available water. We have the Poliari Dam that can take us actually quite far into the future. So it's very important then to take the salts from the mines out of the system. Again, costs. And if you remember the 12 rand a cubic meter for desalinated seawater, you can compare it with Lesotho phase 2 of about 6 rand, and then from the Tugela and the Orange River, and the use of the acid mine drainage water is close to the 10 rand. If we have to go to the Umzumbubu, which is in the country the last big resource that is not utilized, then we're talking something like 17 rand a cubic meter, and even further to the Zambezi River, that some people think that is the solution to all our water problems, we're talking over 20 rand a cubic meter. And then you're in the range of desalinating seawater and pumping that to Gauteng. So the Zambezi and desalination of seawater is very much in the same ballpark. So the fault system strategies tell us to eradicate large unlawful irrigation, to implement water conservation demand management to save 15%, to treat and use the mine effluent, and then also to introduce phase two of the Sutu Island. There are other things like in the future, the reuse of urban return flows, as well as then very important the implementation of a water quality management measure. So one step further into the interior brings us to the olifant.
When you do that thing on the valve, have you taken all the water into consideration that's now affected by acid mine drainage?
Yes, sir.
So when you show me the previous map here,
yeah,
we go with a reconciliation. That's the reconciliation.
Yeah, that is actually the one that.
If you were to take all that water, which we saw tons of it, which is under the earth there, where would it fit into this scheme? How does it help us alleviate problems?
Okay, we need to look from that slide mm-hmm. to the next one. And I just say when we're looking at the acid mine drainage water, that is the water that will flow out of those mines if we don't pump it. Or if we pump it, that we keep it on a constant level. We're not mining the mine water, if I can put it like that. There's water in storage under the ground. But we're not talking about using that big amount of water in storage. Because that's not a sustainable resource. It is a resource that you would pump it down and then the water will just be on a lower level. You can do that, but it is a temporary resource, if I can put it like that. It's like a dam. It's like a dam, but the inflow into the dam is only from the rainfall. And that's a constant, well, on average, over a long period, that's
and
a constant.
Are they telling us, just look at the Witwatersrand, there are three basins.
Yes.
The eastern basin has enormous amounts of water, that's so much so that it's not close to reaching the critical level. The central basin has got huge amounts of water. The western basin, which is overflowing, has got huge amounts. But I'm saying if you were to use all three of those basins of water, do we have any idea how much it is? And will it be, if one uses that and makes it clean, will it be the equivalent of a dam, two dams, three dams?
Yeah, I think we're talking, I don't have the exact number on the tip of my fingers now, but we're talking in the order of a fall dam size or something like that. But just the important thing is that it is not replenished with the same sort of flow that fall dams replenish. So,
I do understand.
Yeah.
Waters will have to then flow in again,
yeah.
And it will become polluted again. And I understand that.
Yeah.
But in terms of dealing with a problem, if you have a source which is the equivalent of the fall dam, the only issue then for me is, because the technology is there to clean it,
yes.
is the cost factor.
Yes.
So I'm trying to work out, if there's so much water, the equivalent of a fall dam,
okay.
the cost then would be cheaper than just doing a small amount of cleaning up. And at least for a period until we've used up that water, that is a very viable water source to us. And I'm trying to understand why that's not fully part of our scenario.
Okay.
It may be that it's too costly at the moment, and it may only be a future, or it fits under desalination. That's fine. I understand that.
Yes.
But at least when you do reconciliations, surely that should be fully part of our plan.
Yes.
And all I'm really asking you, is it fully part of it, or is it only part of it, or, you know...
Yes, sir, I understand.
You know, we went on a trip there, and the amount of water I saw...
It's enormous. Yeah. At this point, it's partially included. So this reconciliation figure that is on there
only shows the impact of treating the inflows that comes out. So it's not using the stored water. But then from this graph, you can see that the desalination is still more costly than phase two of Lesotho Islands. Now, this graph shows you then the partial use plus the next cheapest option, which is Poliari Dam in Lesotho. And that takes us quite a far distance into the future. We can, obviously, when we get there, and we're looking at the Tugela, which is not very much the same cost, we should consider that, using that fully. There are technical problems over and above the cost concern. That's the formation of sinkholes and things like that. If you remove that water, you create that danger. So this is something that we will have to study much further. But in terms of sequencing, this was just in terms of the cost of it, we've not at this stage used the full potential that may be there. Can I carry on? I'm at the Olifant system now. This graph is just an enlargement of that deficit in total that I showed you right at the beginning of the Olifant, where we had much more water required than the available resource, and it's split up in the different areas. Now, if we start just with the cost of alternatives, then you can see that there was at this stage still the possibility of a further Olifant Dam, which after detailed investigations has moved much further into the realm of not possible due to environmental issues. But the use of acid mine drainage, and this is now again from the coal mines in the upper catchment, but very much the same cost as for the gold mine, transfers of water from the Vaal River would be in the order of 18 rand. Now, this is now taking the 6 rand Tugela water, the Lesotho Islands water, and transferring that to the Olifant. So you can see how expensive it becomes. If we have to treat or desalinate seawater only for the Olifants and pump that, then we're talking over 40 rand a cubic meter, and transfers from the Zambezi would be in the order of 50 rand a cubic meter. But this is now only for the Olifant, so it's a much smaller pipeline for the Olifant.
That's fascinating. To transfer water to the Vaal from the Zambezi is cheaper than to transfer it to the Olifant.
Yeah. That is a peculiarity of size. So if you build a large pipeline to transfer...
Size does matter.
Yes. But it is in terms of water pipelines.
That is an acknowledgement.
Chair, but now let's look at the current picture. After we've done the reconciliation strategy, and this is a little bit jamming everything into one picture, but you can see now that we have the current resource, and that drop in the resource is actually the water that we need to allow to remain in the river for the ecology. So that drop is introducing the ecological reserve. Or take away water that is currently being used for other users. But then we can then make that good by introducing a lot of options. So sewage water reuse in Polokwane and Mogalakwena, the use of the acid mine drainage, the removal of invasive alien plants. The yellow is actually the Whoop Dam that is already being built that will supply quite a big portion. And then also the development of groundwater. And over and above that, obviously, there's a high demand line, and the water conservation demand management will drop it to that line. So you can see that introducing with 100% success of all these measures, we actually will have more water available than what we need. So in the strategy, we'll see something in between this, and some of the measures not being 100% successful will take you to a line between the high and the low. But this is where, in future, with the strategy steering committee, things will be monitored. Is the demand as high as what we've projected? How far do we take some of these measures, actually, into the future? Now, so again, we operationalize the reserve. We will, and this is an important part, the power stations in that catchment is actually being supplied from the Lesotho, the Komati, and the Vaal. So we carry on with that. So we're not taking that away from and putting it on the Olifants. But the other water that's required to supply the future water requirements will have to come from the Olifants catchment. It is just too expensive to bring the water from somewhere else. And Polokwane and Mokopane will be augmented from the Olifants. And we can reconcile it through eliminating unlawful use. I've actually covered all of this. The important thing is that we need an orchestrated effort. So So this is not, we cannot just talk about it. We need to implement this. And if we cannot fully achieve these measures that I've listed here, we will be faced with a possibility to move water from low-value irrigation to other use. And that opens a whole new debate about food security and food self-sufficiency. And we will have to address this. When you talk to a farmer in the Olifants catchment, they shout at you and they say, you're taking away the food, until you ask the farmer, but what are you growing? And he tells you it's oranges. And I say, what do you do with your oranges? He says, I export the oranges. Then you realize it's not purely food security. It's obviously for the farmer financially the best thing to do. It's part of the economy, but not food security.
It's not vital corn or wheat.
So we need to look at that. And we also, because people were accusing us of talking about things that we don't know, we've done a report on the cropping potential, rain-fed cropping potential in our neighboring countries. And this report is very interesting, showing, well, firstly, that we use in South Africa a lot of our water, irrigation water, to grow crops that are internationally normally grown under rain-fed conditions. And it looked in at the rain-fed potential in our neighboring countries, and they came up with a figure of close to 27 million hectares. Now, that's about the size of the Free State, that is not being cultivated at the moment, where food, basic food can actually be grown under rain-fed conditions. So this whole issue about the potential in Southern Africa and so on is very important, and the National Planning Commission already picked up on those things. So, Chair, the important thing is that from the National Strategy 1, we went into the detail. And Fred said, we're lacking the detail figures, is actually wrong. We've done the detail. We haven't summarized it again to the national picture, because that summary has got very limited value. The important thing is that we have the detailed strategies for all these areas on what we need to do to ensure that we've got water secure in these areas. And what is very, very...
But what you don't have this whole acid mine drainage thing that I'm looking for. E.g., when are we going to do this? A proper research about it. Considering all the things Mr. Van Rooyen is saying, I'm not saying he mustn't check that. I mean, if we take the water out and there's going to be sinkholes, you know, scientifically we must see if that's going to be so or not. Because I imagine if you take so much water, or you take so much water, the chance of a sinkhole is the same. Doesn't matter. I mean, it surely has to be the same. So I'm trying to work out to what extent. You see, the problem is, what worries me about your answer, there's no right and wrong answer, but what worries me about the answer is, over and above the fact that we have to stop water spilling out somewhere, are we not creating a wrong impression that this can be a source of water? That's what worries me. Unless we've properly done the research to say, there's so much water under the earth just in Gauteng, and then you can go to Mpumalanga and wherever else. There's so much, and we can actually use this water, and it can be equivalent of a Vaal dam. And it's going to cost us so much, etc. Or we can't do it. The risk is too big for whatever. Because otherwise, there's other money we're now pumping in. This long-term solution of A and B. I mean, if we're not making it part of our reconciliation strategies fully, I mean, more than Mr. Van Rooyen has explained, it's really worrying me that we're not doing this thing scientifically enough. And I really think we must urgently, from my point of view, to under each key strategic messages here, I mean, one of them should be that we should go and do the proper work to see what viability AMD is in this country as a water source. And not just to deal with it as a thing that's coming out of the earth, which we now... Last when we went to check, it was successfully being stopped. I mean, the water wasn't pumping out everywhere anymore. So, you know, I mean, you're now spending money on a whole research for a year for a long-term strategy, which, as you know, my view on it, it's far too long into the future. I want some answers now. But I really think that this must be part of the answers. I mean, we must know if it's viable or not. I mean, I must stop wasting time on this thing if we don't think it's a viable option, because I mean, if you look at all the options we've got desalination, we've got pumping water from Zambezi, how much is it going to cost us? And we're fully committed to look at those possibilities, But yet, there's a real issue there that we don't seem to be...
No, I just want to complicate the measure further, and that is that there's a huge difference between the coal mines, for instance, and the gold mines.
But you see, you shouldn't have to say this to me. You should have all this work done already and say, when it comes to coal mines, we can use that water, no problem. When it comes to gold mines, we have got a Vaal Dam under the earth, but we can't use it. We can only use a Bloemhof Dam. We can't use anything at all, other than the coming out of the earth. You see what I'm trying to say is we should have all our ducks in a row on it. Because if we look at the whole picture of acid mine drainage, surely the cost will come down. Because as you say, a little bit of water to take it to Olifant is very costly, but doing a huge thing may be very much cheaper. Now, until we've got the whole picture, you know, DJ? You know what I'm saying?
Chair, maybe briefly, I'm not sure they're inviting comments. I was going to ask the acting DG for National Water Resources, Mbani, just to comment briefly on the point we are raising.
Well, you don't have to now.
Okay.
I just want you guys to make it one of the key strategic things that we have to look at, or come back to us and say, it's just not viable. Sorry, we're not going to do it. So, you know, that we know. I mean, I'm just saying this for me. You know, Anglo-America's CEO came to introduce herself this morning. She's now invited us to go to their Mpumalanga plant, which they've created as a private citizen, on the where they're now creating clean water and they're selling to the municipality in that area. Now, the first thing I thought to myself, has Dwar given them a license to sell water? But okay, by the way, I'll find out when I go there. But you know what I'm trying to say is people are already moving there. We may be left behind. I mean, the private sector may move there and start doing these things. That is why I need this, that we make this a priority to get all this information, to tell us how viable or unviable it is. I'm just not equipped to say, I'm seeing stuff which I'm interested in and thinking, but I'm just not equipped enough, and I'm not sure about my other members, but I think we're getting more interested in acid mine drainage, looking at the options, but it seems to, we've not seen it as a potential yet that can give us the type of things we want. Okay. So that's all I say. Put it, let us know how you're going to put it in the program or not.
Sorry, John. Sir, we take note. And we are actively involved in the process, and there's extreme interest. It's true. And some of it local from our own entities in Randwater. And there's extreme lobbying to actually get involved. Our plan is now, of course, on the issues of, is this a supply issue that can make a significant difference? Is it just a water quality environmental issue that has to be addressed? And others are seeing a business opportunity, but the full extent of its contribution, this is what we have to study and refine. We had to deal with the first phase, which was the emergency component part, first phase, but others already, both local and international, by the way, they are knocking at their doors, and the Japanese have interest, Australians have interest, the British have interest, even inviting some of our people to make study tours there. And we have this study which will be ready soon at the next year from the midterm and long term. We're saying we want to regulate that. We are also developing expression of interest. It's just to see, or request for proposals, who actually has significant knowledge, not just a chance taking. So we want to regulate. As I said, there's an extreme rush, and we will have it unfolds. So will we share. We just don't want to talk from an informed basis and suggest that there's significant amounts of water. The institutional arrangement comes into the core as well, because as mines also say, we can assist in this problem, solving this problem. That's that element of it as well, that the mines have created the problems. Some are not even traceable in terms of ownership. So just hold on, please. Yeah, and some are not even traceable. So, and we are working with the DMNR to actually trace them as well. But others are saying we can deal with the problem provided once we have dealt, because you can have partial treatment, you can have full treatment. That licensing now, when you have full treatment, not just to deal.
No, we're aware of that, Edith.
Yeah.
But for me, what you must do as a department, you must do the research quickly to tell us whether this is an option or not, and how much of an option. That's the issue. I mean, all these other things, we know these problems with the mines, we've had them here. One of me and him had a big fight in the media a while back, or he had a big fight, I didn't say anything, but and things like that. So those things we're aware of, the mines. But the problem is, my big problem is we're moving with certain options at the moment, and we're spending a lot of money. And, I mean, on the last tour we went, Dr. Kiert, is it Kiert? Marius Kiert. I mean, he gave us figures that blew our mind, that how much this is all going to cost. And yet, I put a big store by these reconciliation plans. One of the really good things this department has done is these reconciliation plans. And the issue of acid mine drainage is not fully integrated into these yet. Yet we're talking about, he says it's now going to cost $1.6 billion, eh? $2.2 billion. Something like that. That's a hell of a lot. But, you know, the point I'm just trying to make is we're moving somewhere in one place and we don't seem to look at it as a fully integrated solution in another place. And that's all I want. I don't want to say now we prefer this or that. That's not what I'm saying. But what we need is the evidence quickly. Because, I mean, if we only place coal mines now on this plan of ours, and we only place the water that's running out, which we've now stopped running out, then it seems in these plans we don't see it as a viable option. And that's why I'm just saying that research must be done quickly, including what Mr. Van Rooyen said about sinkholes and all that stuff, okay?
Yes,
I'm
almost finished.
No, go for it.
What is very important is that I find this discussion actually very satisfying, because I think the work that we've done actually leading us into those questions that you're asking.
Yes.
And we need to take that further.
Now, more research you do, more information you bring,
yes,
more we can engage.
Exactly. So what is important, though, is that the detailed work that we've done actually confirmed the broad strategies of the National Strategy 1. It added desalination. So we can actually be very proud of National Strategy 1. We've already identified these. But it also confirmed that we're dealing with complex issues and that solutions are much more than just building more dams. We've passed that stage. Water conservation demand management is very, very important. We cannot afford to waste water anywhere, anytime anymore. And groundwater is very important. Chair, this is still a very undervalued and underused resource, and we need to promote the use of groundwater. The reuse of effluent is very important at the coast, but it is being done in the Fall River system already, because that water is not going into the sea, it's going back into the river, and we're reusing it. There are limited opportunity for more dams, and it will be very expensive where it's still possible. There we've mentioned the desalination, the importance of desalination. It is already being done on small scale from seawater. Mine water desalination is hugely important, and the large scale desalination of seawater is imminent. So it's possible to make more water available anywhere in the country in the future, but it will be at rising costs. And we believe that we shouldn't be going for the water from the Zambezi, but rather for the food that can be produced there. So water for increase in irrigation is very limited. And in some areas, I'm not saying we're going to do that everywhere, but in some areas we may have to move some irrigation water to other use. And I've touched on the fact that food can be grown in our neighboring countries. Then we've got catchment rehabilitation, clearing of invasive plants, rainwater harvesting, all those things are also very important. There's just some messages from the All Town studies, now those 814 studies, already showed us again that a very large proportion of municipalities have no idea of how much water they use. There's no metering being done, so they don't know how much water they use, never mind how much they're losing.
and there are large wastage of water evident. The per capita demand is much too high in those areas if you take sustainability into account. The free water that's provided by some of those towns are far above those levels that it was intended for. And then there's very poor cost recovery, lack of proper maintenance and skill operators, and the technical competency is very low. And that's why we see a lot of problems with municipalities. And then groundwater is a very important resource, although some of the towns don't want to hear that. Chair, I'm not going into the details.
But now, what on the deck there, for example, have we got any idea that if we take X amount of money and put it in fixing this up, that we'll get Y? You know, so let's say 40% water is wasted, some people say. I don't know how true it is.
Yeah.
So will it be, if we take R500,000 and we put it in fixing up these things, then we'll be able to eliminate the 40% water we use, or 20%, or 30% of the water we waste. I mean, have we done stuff like that? Are studies being done about it?
There's a lot of work that has been done about it, and it always shows that a lot of that wastage can, that's the cheapest thing to do. It's not $500,000,
chair.
It's not $500,000, but there's a lot of money required, but it's still the best thing to do. And the, one of the big problems we have is that the government has created funds for infrastructures like the MIG and the RBIC and so on, but the municipalities find it difficult to access funds for maintenance and this water conservation demand management. Now, I've seen a very encouraging moves in terms of the National Planning Commission report where they're talking now, and the department is actively involved in that, about creating this fund for water conservation demand management. Because very often those projects, if you want to call it like that, can repay that money very quickly from the water that they save and don't have to spend it on treatment and things like that. So that is extremely important. Chair, in the strategy there's also a desalination strategy because it's new, and I don't you can read about that, and also a reuse strategy that we need the public to comment upon. So just in summary, I've already said it, it's, water management is complex, but it's possible for us to have water security. We can use water more efficiently, but we must implement the plans, and our security is about implementation. So we need more.
Sorry, can I just go back to this? This old study thing is worrying me.
All time.
Old time study. Do you have a report somewhere that can tell me, say, we found that Kukanap, the taps are losing 20% of its water, and it will cost so much to fix up? Do we have a report like that somewhere? Can it be pulled together? With, you said a lot of work is done.
Chair, this is also some of the work that we still need to do, but we've made estimates of losses in many of those towns. Now, if you don't measure what's going in, you can't for certain say what is being lost. You need to measure that. So one of the first things we need to ensure is that municipalities start to measure their intake. But we've made estimates of losses and so on. So you can, in any of those...
What stops us having a law like that?
I don't think there's anything that
stops us that everyone that provides water should have a meter that tells us exactly how much water they... And does anything stop us from passing a law like that?
I think it's in the Act. Sometimes we need regulations to do that, but it can be done by regulations.
For me, that's just so obvious. We must do it immediately. I mean, we should have done it yesterday. I mean, to see what solutions we can have, we can only know if we... know exactly how much water people are using, and if that means we have to meter them, then we must force them to have a meter that we can have access to, isn't it? Can someone tell us, can someone have a look at that and just tell me what we need to get that off the ground?
So I'm just looking on the document. I'll come back to you.
You can answer later, but not now. That's fine.
So implementation, more financial resources, the appropriate human resources, it was mentioned earlier. We're in desperate shortage in many places. And then sometimes we have to make unpopular decisions, and we need fully functional institutions. And we have to realize that water is not going to become cheaper as we go into the future. And we may have to make some trade-offs. and that water will have to be central in all our planning. So I think this is okay.
I always like your inputs. I enjoy them because they give us gives me a picture of things that I don't know. It gives me a better picture of, you know, those different catchment areas, those dams, how much water do they have, how much will they need in the future. This, all the work, that's why this is the first input. All our work has to flow from this. And every gap that we have in our work, we must fill it up quickly. Like the AMD, this thing about the all-town strategy. The only way I am able to convince Treasury that they must put forward X amount of money to fix up the all-town solution. If you give us that information, we can have a look at it, and we know as a committee whether we are supported or not. So we need that information. I mean, and once you, this committee supports it, I mean, we don't have too much clout amongst us, but we have voices, you know, we can talk a bit and so on. And it's important that we then push in the same direction, because if we then know that you've asked Treasury for this money and they haven't given it to you, well, if that's something that we can take up with Treasury. But we need that info. So there's two things at least here that I need more info on, okay? Questions, comments, anything people want to ask or say? Mr. Morgan, Ms. Wenger, Mr. Fetzi, Ms. Longaina.
Thank you for the presentation. I really appreciate it and I enjoyed it. It's good to go into some more detail. And also just to be reassured of the quality of work that is being done. So thank you for that. I just want to go slightly beyond that. I get the hierarchy of different options and the need to cost those so we can make informed decisions. So thank you for that. One of the things which I'm interested in is, you know, certain ways of increasing our water supplies, as you say, cost more. Desalinization costs more than augmentation, you know, which costs more than repairing leaks. What are some of the on the ground realities about community and or groups of people? And yeah, I think are factors that inform our identity, like culture or religion. How are those informing some of the plans we make on new available water supplies? I'm sure you know what I mean. I mean, I'm from Durban, and there's a particular big issue in our media and in the community from the Muslim community who are up in, let me say, part of the Muslim community, who are up in arms about the reuse of sewage water. I mean, I'm not making any judgments on the issue. People, you know, have beliefs, and perhaps some of it can be mitigated by assurances, because you know, no one's going to put in unsuitable water into a water supply, I would like to think. And then I think you said something about groundwater, and you said towns don't really like groundwater. You sort of throwaway comments. I'd like you to expand on that, and perhaps in the context of what I am saying. And I mean, this can be increased. This discussion can go to a lot of other things. I mean, it can go to acid mine water and the desalinization thereof. I, over the years, I've encountered stakeholders who don't like the idea of that because they just don't believe that it will get rid of all the metals. Or for that matter, the desalinization of seawater. Now, you know, I have confidence in government to be able to do all of these things to the degree which they should be done so that you can augment water supplies, but it's evident that a lot of South Africans don't. So talk us through some of those issues for a moment and what, if anything, can be done or you suspect will be done in order to provide assurance that these other sources of water, which you're correctly starting to lay down, and which will become more of a priority in the next 5 to 20 years, are in fact safe, provided they're treated to whatever acceptable standard.
Can I reply on that, or do you
Ms. Wenger.
Thank you, Chair. And I'd like to know if the department knows the difference in percentage of the losses. How much is due to non-metering and how much is due to just sheer losses that our municipality is incurring? And also the ailing infrastructure and the replacement of this ailing infrastructure is going to be a major problem, and it continues to be a major problem. Also, in the annual report of municipalities, they have to declare what the losses are. Now, if they are not metering, how do they come to those figures into the annual reports? I'd like to know. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. On the water system strategies, the last figure they talked about implementation of the water quality management. I don't want to assume, but I just want to check if this implementation has taken into consideration the quality of water pipes, you know, the whole infrastructure. Because if we have pipes that are not in order, it will actually reverse, you know, the good intention of water quality management. And the other one on eliminating unlawful water use, I think it just, you know, it talks to the whole issues of compliance.
Whatever phone that is, it'll go straight into a water bucket.
Acid water.
Acid water. Continue with the session.
Yeah, on eliminating unlawful water use, I think it has to do with compliance. But the question is, do we have... you know, the authority that is effective in that area, because if we want to manage water effectively, we have to abide by the rules and regulations, the whole you know, issues of legislation. And I think it goes back to the first presentation about the coordination of departments, that we need to be, you know, working holistically for us to manage effectively. And the last one on the key strategic message is that food could be grown by third countries and traded to South Africa. I think we have level information in relation to competitive advantage so that we do not trade at a loss. Just assuming that you do have that information. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also echo my support on what Honorable Morgan has said about this information that we are presenting to us today. I was just commenting by saying, you know, you have clarified, because sometimes when you say the dam is already finished, planning and implementation you have mentioned it very clearly that are not the same, because we used to fight when we are here. You said the dam is already, people will drink water, only to find out you are still at the planning stage. But today you have put it correctly to say the planning stage is that side and the implementation. So that point I think is very much important to me, even to this committee. You mentioned also again the steering committee for each area to monitor. You know what is problematic to us people who are working on this issue of water is monitoring. I don't know this monitoring that you are talking about. Is there anything that you are going to do that the municipality themselves must be able to monitor? Because the big problem, as Honorable Matthias Ferguson already said, is this issue at the municipality level. We are, the municipality are unable to this infrastructure, to can improve the infrastructure, because the infrastructure is the old one. So I think when we talk at this level, we'll be able, because Mina, I don't think we can talk good thing at this level and saying we are the national, the villages are there at the local, where we suppose when we come up with this good strategy, we must go down to the local. We must make a healthy environment. that if the municipality is unable, we must just zoom in. You need to tell us what is that we can do to say if the municipality can be act like in this fashion, then you can zoom in to go and help. Because there is no use. We will come always with this nice, it's very nice, and if we can implement it from bottom to top, it will help and assist us in this scarcity of water. That was my comment, Chairperson. Thank you.
Mr. Morgan?
Thanks. Just I was thinking now, where do... I understand that you probably can't account for every possible water source, and in many cases we mostly talking here about augmenting bulk supplies. But where do new technologies fit in? You've added desalinization in one, and you've now provided a sub-strategy for it in two. I'm thinking particularly of fog water harvesting as a option to augment supplies from the Great Dam in the sky. Perhaps there's some issues with scale, but it would seem to me for rural South Africa in particular to be a possibility to improve sky, improve supply, even on a smaller scale.
Okay, if you can answer all those, please.
We'll do my best.
In 5 minutes.
This question about the involvement of communities in those options is very interesting, and this is what public participation is about in my mind. There was an announcement about this reuse project that Itikweni wants to do, and there was no response. And Itikweni actually went out of their way to advertise, to get reporters from the papers in to sensitize them about what we're doing. They really went out of their way to get the response that we're now getting from those communities. So I don't know what the outcome will be of this. I mean, there's obviously this whole issue about how clean can we make that water and whether we can convince those communities that the water that's going into the system is actually much better quality than they can ever get from any other source. But in the end, there is that choice to be made. And the choice will be to reuse water at a certain price or to go to the next option that's going to cost more. Now, exactly how that will pan out, I can't tell you now, but this is something that we will have to work through in order to try and make the best choice, taking that into account. It's interesting that in the Fall River system, or all the inland systems, that water is being returned to the system and not even necessarily treated to the same level that Itikweni wants to treat it now. And there's nobody complaining about it there, maybe because they don't know. And this is something that we... Well, they know about it in Durban, yes. And we need to take it as it comes. Groundwater is a very
including in that, for example. I'm a very keen golfer. I don't want to do anything to mess up golf courses. But I found many golf courses where effluent is used as the water in the golf course.
Yes.
And those golf courses are perfect. In fact, they seem to be greener than other guys for some unknown reason, which is maybe the growth potential of effluent. But, the fact of the matter is, I wonder how much water in this country we use in golf courses. As important as they are to me as golf courses, I don't want to stop them being there. I think they've got an important function and everything else. But the point I think we should have a law that says you water golf courses or big sports stadiums and that you must use effluent.
And in many places that is actually being
done. And we should be doing that. I mean, my golf course here, all that they do tell you don't kick your balls. You shouldn't be doing that in any case. I don't know why they warn you, but... Well, there's another reason why, but okay, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at golf balls at this stage.
Sure.
But I mean, I'm very serious about this. I mean, it just seems to me such a foolish thing that we do.
Yes.
These polo fields.
These polo for the horses.
Yeah.
I mean, you can influence on that. Why do we use clean, pristine water that you can drink? It's that crazy. We just mad.
If I can go to groundwater, it is. It's a complex issue that people think when they use water from a dam and they can see it, they can manage it better than the water that they can't see under the ground. But in principle, groundwater resource is actually a better resource than a surface resource because you don't have evaporation from your groundwater dam, if I can call it that. But I think the biggest problems with the use of groundwater comes from the mismanagement of our boreholes, our groundwater resources. And there's a huge education training exercise that we have to do to change this perception. You have a little town of Willowmore in the Eastern Cape. They're using groundwater. They know exactly what's going on. They've got cell phone monitors on each borehole pump, and they know exactly what's being pumped. And if you ask the manager there, what will you do if you run out of this resource? He says, I will just get another geohydrologist to show me another place to drill another hole, and we will carry on. So you have a small town like that that utilizes groundwater very well and efficiently. And then you get Middelburg in the Eastern Cape, just a few kilometers from there. They insist that the only solution for them is getting water from the Orange River at 3 times or 4 times the cost of the groundwater. They've got much better groundwater resources than Willowmore. But that's, in their mind, their only solution. So it's a mindset created. I'm not always sure where and when, but we need to change that. There's, in principle, nothing wrong. Actually, groundwater is so much cheaper. You don't have to treat it to the same levels because it's already clean water coming out of the ground. And so there's a lot of work that we have to do to change perceptions, and then also to change the way we manage the groundwater. But the way the municipalities manage that in detail. The non-metering, some municipalities, they claim to report on this, but if you go into the detail, you will find that they don't know how much water they're using. And we cannot really determine the losses without doing that meeting. So, but we know that a lot of the losses, or a lot of the losses in municipalities, is not about because it's not metered, it's real losses. It is actually water that's being lost through broken pipes, or even then when you go into the houses through the seals in the taps that are not in there, and the water is just running through the system and things like that. So there's a huge proportion of the losses are real losses. Some may be because we don't measure it properly. And yes, there's a lot of reasons for that, but ailing infrastructure would be a very big portion of that. And if maintenance was done properly over the years, it would have been much less. So maintaining all existing infrastructure is hugely important. In terms of water quality management, the effect of broken sewers could be a very important contribution. But when we do the water quality management, it will have to address that as well. So a municipality is responsible for their infrastructure, and they will be responsible to make sure that those pipes are actually in place. Unlawful water use, I should rather refer that to Elgar behind me, but it is obviously a thing of compliance, and we have the legal instruments, but it's also not a simple matter. There's in terms of who is actually lawful or not is something that you have to go into the detail of even the previous Water Act to determine whether that farmer or user had the right to use that water. And so there's legal technical matters that we need to get in place. But in the end, it comes back to the metering and forcing people to meter to actually show that they're not using more water than what is required. This whole idea about growing food in our neighboring countries growing the food and exporting it to us, is something that the Department of Water Affairs is not in control of that. All that we're saying, there's a water perspective on this. And we as a country need to realize that and start working with our neighbors in terms of importing more food from them. Now, South Africa don't grow rice, for instance, and we eat a lot of rice. So this is something that has just happened. You know, we're importing rice from other countries. Now, it is, in a sense, an expansion of that. On the other hand, we're exporting some of our food stuff that we grow to other countries. And this is now something that one will have to see in this regional perspective. And the National Planning Commission 2 weeks ago had a workshop, a SADC workshop, where they discussed this and the opportunities that there is. And they were talking about trade barriers and all of those things that may be preventing these things to happen. So this is really not a water affairs thing, but a country perspective, and we just want to give those perspectives. The monitoring aspect of the strategy steering committees, and I'm again talking about the bigger systems and the bigger strategy. There, part of the monitoring is actually done by the municipalities themselves. When we're talking water conservation demand management, those municipalities must come and report on the successes or not in terms of the water conservation demand management. So they're talking, and they come and they say, this is what we save, and then we say to them, how do you know? How do you determine that? And they have to explain how they meter it, how they measure it, and things. And some of the big municipalities are very good at it. I'm not talking about the bulk of the smaller towns. This is, you know, after we've learned that this is the situation, we need to go into those details. So there are not strategy steering committees for each and every little town. We're talking just about the big ones at the moment, and we will have to see how are we going to have it done in the smaller ones. So the technologies, there's quite a range. You've mentioned fog harvesting, and I just noted down there was also in the past things about milking clouds. There were towing of icebergs to Cape Town. You know, there's some of these things are really, I don't want to say pie in the sky, because towing an iceberg is something else than pie in the sky. But you know, if you do the cost calculations and so on, then you see this is just too far removed. Fog harvesting is actually in a few places where you actually have the fog available. You could look at that. But South Africa has very few places in the country where you have that on a consistent enough basis so that you can really supply water. I mean, I'm thinking some places along the west coast, you get fog for many days, and so that you can probably do it. But the fog that we get in other places are there 1 or 2 days a year, and you cannot really utilize for it. Sir, I think I've covered most of it.
Yeah, you've done good. What input can we fit in now until just before 1?
Chair, what I propose is this section 4.3, that we skip the investment framework and go to protection and management of water ecosystems. And in Delegam Wahapi, Rekichi can do it in about 10 minutes.
Oh, I like that. She's I hope she's been promoted for that efficiency.
Yeah. Chair, while she's coming to the front, can I just add to the comments made, your question about metering? There's indeed a regulation, part of our regulations in terms of Section 9 of the Water Services Act. There are regulations that municipalities must measure and actually report on their water in and water out, to the total water balance. We've got the regulated performance management system, but some of them are not reporting, and I think it let us admit this way we're lacking.
Can I ask that you then do us a report
on
what information you do gather? Because clearly your man here on reconciliation studies clearly is of the view that there's a lot of that not being done.
No, correct. He's correct.
I think we need a report then to tell us this and what the department is going to do to make sure that we have by next year 100%.
Thank you, Chair.
at the bottom of the page.
Slide 136, am I correct on my...
Oh, there is a number there.
Yeah.
Okay. No, sorry. It's not there, but on 135 there's a number. Okay. Pambil, Koskar.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, I'll try to be as brief as possible, but I'll also try to look at some of the strategic issues that we felt that we need to bring to the fore. In the protection of water resources, we literally look at the maintenance of the quantity and quality of the water resources while we ensure that there is ecological sustainability. So what we aim to do is to prevent further degradation of our water resources. And in order for us to be able to prevent that, we also have to ensure that we rehabilitate some of the degraded water resources. We do... Thank you. We do have some of the common water quality concerns that are more prevalent in the country. Of course, there are sporadic sewage effluent spillages that happen every now and then due to some of the dilapidated infrastructure that we do have operated by some of our municipalities. These lead to increased microbiological contamination of the water resources, which may lead as well to health aspects if the water is not properly cleaned. Then what we have been talking about as well earlier today, the acid mine drainage is one of the prevalent problems that we do have. There is also localized pollution in urbanized and industrialized areas due to industrial spillages, but again, in urbanized areas, we have dense settlements that also create some of the pollution that goes straight into some of our water resources, particularly whereby you have informal settlements that are within or close to the riverbanks. And then eutrophication, which comes as a result of high phosphate levels in some of our water and results in growth of some of the aquatic plants and might turn that water to be more difficult to clean before it could be utilized. And of course, salination mainly being diffuse pollution. Sometimes the agricultural additives that are added there, that is your fertilizers, they are more than required. And as such, when you do get your rains, there is leachate and those drain into the water system, raising again the phosphates that we are talking about. This is just some of the pictures. Starting from my left, you see the green surroundings in terms of the eutrophication, where the dam has some of the high levels of eutrophication, and then some of our sewage spillages that do happen within our areas. And below there, your acid mine drainage, and the part of it is starting to dry up, and then you see it forming that white kind of layer. And then some industrial spillages that are not properly controlled, and they just get out of torn pipes and move straight into some of our water resources. The problems I've cited are further exacerbated by the overabstraction of groundwater and the overabstraction in terms of surface water in some of the catchments. And as such, there is habitat destruction, particularly when we have a sand mining or mining, according to how other people call it, and then an increase in alien aquatic plants, as well as some of the agricultural activities, as I have already indicated. And then there are developments that, due to a lack of understanding or knowledge, you find that they occur within estuaries or on the wetlands. And I think there is a need for us to educate South Africans about the importance and the value of some of these water media.
An analysis has been made in terms of the prevalent water quality issues, but the report goes into further detail as to what are the other aspects that we have looked into. This is just a summary of the key ones that I've talked to earlier. You find that eutrophication is more prevalent in the Crocodile West Mariko, your Rodeplatz dams, and your Hafte Beers Board and all that area. The lower and middle valve, Mvoti to Umzimkulu and Umzimvubu to Kaiskama. Acid mine drainage, which might vary according to the different areas in which mining happens, ranging from your gold, coal, or platinum mine area, does occur within the upper valve area, the Olifant, the middle valve, Utukela, Ingomati, Crocodile West Mariko, and of course we are starting to pick up that Limpopo, whereby we are starting to get some of the, we are starting to get some signs of the degradation of the water resources due to some of the activity, of the mining activities that are taking place there. The microbiological contamination, we have managed to realize that, due to particular issues ranging from operations of our sewage works and ranging to the infrastructure that is not too good looking is quite countrywide spread, and that's an area that we might have to increase our efforts in trying to curb. And then salination does happen countrywide with minimal impact in the Mvoti to Umzimkulu. That is more or less like your isopos in those areas, whereby you still find that that area is less impacted upon by salinity. When we protect the water resources, we have two broad-based approaches that we have to take into consideration. The resource-directed measures. These focus on the overall health or condition of the water resource. And this is measured by the ecological status of that particular resource. What we aim to do is to achieve a balance between protecting and using that water resource for social and economic development. In the resource-directed measures, that's where we look into our river systems, start to classify and give them a particular grading so that we do not find ourselves going below that particular grading. At least aim to improve that grading so that the resources is protected. On the other hand, self-directed controls. These are controls that we put in place to limit and constrain what must be imposed on the use of water, e.g., the standards that we need to set, the conditions that we have to put into some of the water use license applications and authorizations that we issue out so that we are able to achieve the desired level of protection. We need to control water use activities at the source, and at this particular stage, you find that there is some linkage between the source-directed controls as well as the regulation, because we have to have those controls in place for us to be able to regulate the rest of the users. The broad-based approach that we take in terms of the management of water resources is also supported by the hierarchy in decision-making. For us to be in a position to achieve that hierarchy, we need to operate in partnership with other departments. Because in terms of the hierarchy, we first of all have to consider prevention, then minimize whatever waste that is produced, then consider the reuse and the recycling and any energy recovery thereof before we could consider disposal. Disposal is meant to be the last option that we have to consider, because it might have detrimental impact on our water resources. So to a particular extent, there is a need for us to collaborate and communicate with industry, particularly in terms of some of the systems and the machinery that they use in production, such that they are much more efficient and they enable us to look into aspects of our minimization. So the long-term vision for the resource is to take into consideration social, economic, and environmental concerns into consideration. Looking at the bigger picture, we literally have an integrated water resources management approach, whereby we look into the visioning of a particular catchment. And as the visioning process, the communities and the stakeholders are involved, and they decide on the kind of desired water resource in their particular area. After that discussion, then they agree on the management class that is achievable within that particular time frame. That management class should not be below what is already in place. In fact, it has to strive to achieve a better class for that particular area. Then we determine what we call is the reserve, which has already been alluded to, which looks into ensuring that we have enough water for basic human needs as well as sustaining our ecology, and then determine the RQOs. RQOs are resource quality objectives. These are the measures that are used to be able to monitor whether we are improving the standard of the resource or we're working below what we said we would achieve. In order for us to achieve those RQOs, we have to have developed a catchment management strategy. The catchment management strategy might have several components, including resource management strategy, the resource-directed management strategy, and any other supportive strategies that will ensure that we protect the resource. We then further allocate and do the proper authorizations, and then we have water use control, which of course comes up with the standards that I've talked to in terms of norms and standards and the conditions, and catchment management plans in specific areas so that we are able to achieve what we said we wanted to achieve. Of course, we have to monitor then and ensure compliance such that we maintain the stakes that we said we would come up with. And later on now we do our catchment assessment again in order to review the state of that particular area and see whether we can come up with a better or an improved vision in the future. The key priority areas for resource protection currently, we think that we have, and that is the approach we want to take as a department, is to come up with a resource protection strategy. The priority interventions thereof will have to include those for acid mine drainage, eutrophication, and integrated water quality management. As much as there is work that is already being done on acid mine drainage, it is more area-based, focusing mostly maybe in the Witwatersrand, and of course there is work within the Witbank area. But we're saying that we want to have a national approach in terms of how we're going to be able to deal with these matters, and also start to looking at per sector issues, such as your coal mining, how do we deal with that, how do we deal with gold mining, and how do we deal with your platinum-related residues. We need to rehabilitate some of the important water resources and some of the critically threatened wetlands. Wetlands are some of the mechanisms that help with the improvement of water quality, particularly when we do have some of the discharges that are unplanned. So we have to maintain such systems. We have to establish clear goals that relate to quantity and quality of the relevant water resources. These are the resource quality objectives that I've been talking to, because the resource quality objectives have quality parameters, quantity parameters, as well as habitat parameters and indicators that we can use to be able to ensure that that resource is healthy. And then, of course, we need to develop an integrated water quality information system, which can be used by both policymakers as well as the people who want to have access on our water quality-related issues, as well as the regulator when the regulator is in place. We need to further develop some of our regulatory tools, because because as much as we do have these in place, but some are still lacking. So for example, we have to speed up the development of the waste discharge system, and that is part of the plans that we have in our strategy. Enhance capacity in institutions to manage water quality. I think we have been talking about the capacity within the water sector that is lacking, and we are fully aware that we need to look into that. Some of the initiatives, for example, that we have started include the development of some of the technical modules required to be able to operate in some of the environments, particularly in RDM. This we are doing in partnership with the University of Johannesburg, which is in collaboration with the University of the North and a few other universities. In the whole process of protecting water resources, we ensure that there is collaboration between ourselves, the water users, sister departments, and anybody who also is part and parcel and has a responsibility in the protection of the environment. And as already indicated by my colleague, Mr. Van Zyl, when we did the classification, for example, we took into consideration the national freshwater ecological protection areas as developed the atlas itself, and it was used as part and parcel of determining the class of that particular area. I'd like to stop at this juncture. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Of what we do is in the Act, as per Chapter 3 of the National Water Act, and as such forms part of the National Water Resources Strategy. Some of the work has already started in those areas, but there is more that is required for us to be able to have a national approach. For example, if you look into aspects of eutrophication, there is a lot of work that is taking place in your Crocodile West Mexico in terms of trying to address. But I think for us as a department to be able to say that we've reached a level whereby we understand or we are doing, there has to be some major impacts, because it's not that it happens in, the eutrophication is not entirely based in Crocodile West. There are other areas that need to be addressed as well. So strategically, we have to have that national approach and copying from areas whereby implementation has already started. Thank you.
just a small one, Chair, on the hierarchy of decision making. I find it very crucial in that it is proactive if it believes in prevention being better than cure, which is cost effective. And, you know, we rely on compliance again for us to be productive in this plan here. So my small question is, do you have a budget to, you know, encourage this compliance so that we could realize this hierarchy?
It's really just a comment here. I was a little bit taken aback on the comment on the asset line drainage, that we now sitting in Limpopo with a problem. The reason I say this is because I thought that we were really looking at it very closely. Obviously, we can't do anything about past problems, but we're now sort of encountering new problems, and it's really just a comment of real concern. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. The budget for compliance. Ma'am, what I also mentioned was that as much as we do have some of the regulatory tools, we are aiming to complete others that are going to enable us to reach what we say, or we're going to complete some that will enable us to achieve what we said we'll achieve. A pacing example is the waste discharge charge system. Because the waste discharge charge system will have some of your mitigation charges. Okay.
Sorry, I
meant
for incentive.
Yes, I'm getting it. It has two parts to it. It has a mitigation and an incentive charge, which by will enable us to be able to encourage the industries to look into some of the technology that they do based on those charges that would be put in place for us to be able to protect the resource. So it's a kind of cyclic kind of approach whereby while we look into the aspects of coming up with some of the standards and norms, then we also have regulatory measures that are going to ensure that we do achieve those. The acid mine drainage. Yes, ma'am. Unfortunately, it's not merely there is a historical aspect to it in terms of your abandoned mines, but the whole aspect of management of water from the mining industry is a problem that we have to deal with and look at in a more stricter manner. And as such, you find some of the problems that we are talking to now. And I think, if I am to add, we do have a few solutions in place in terms of the treatment, but the major issue is what do we do with the byproducts thereof? And until we get that kind of what we would agree upon as an optimum kind of treatment methodology, we might have some of the problems that we do have currently in terms of AMD. But the major issues, of course, the major issue, of course, is around enforcement to be able to ensure that some of the mining companies do comply to conditions and standards that have been set.
Thank you.
my indication, the way I'm assessing what is left, would be well pleased with similar amount of time. The areas roughly would have covered, which are still outstanding. There's the skills presentation, which probably would be about 15 minutes. There's institutions like your cash management agents. That's what Tobos do. Yes, it links with what has been covered. That would be about 30 minutes. There's also the information on infrastructure and research. That probably will also be another 15 to 20. But there's a substantive one as well, the investment framework, which probably will take about 30 minutes as well. So it would cover a similar amount of time. And they all link so well with the appreciated check. Let's get that answer. Thanks.
We'll start probably the